Turn Into Something Beautiful by Black Chaps. Read by Library Chick 94. Fandom, Stargate Atlantis. Relationship, Rodney McKay, John Shepherd. Rating, explicit. Recorded for the Podfic Big Bang, 2014. The aviators were a must. John even carried a backup pair just in case. He laughed off comments about them, turning everything into a joke, mostly about himself. Anyway, Antarctica was a bright place, and he never wanted to be snowblind. By the time he managed to get his copter, Air Force General very much intact, thanks to him, to the outpost, he was glad for the extra pair of sunglasses. Diving headfirst into a snowbank had destroyed his favorites. "Don't touch anything, Major," O'Neill drawled, "and you can lose the glasses." Now was the time for a sarcastic comeback, but John felt like growling, not teasing, after that rough ride. "I'm not in the mood to have my tail pulled." O'Neill made a show of checking John's ass, not going to pretend to understand. "Good." John crossed his arms and wished for an out-of-the-way place to sit for a second. Adrenaline was starting to make him edgy. O'Neill wandered off, muttering about someone named Daniel, and John took a deep breath and tried to work the shakes out. That thing had tried damn hard to blow him out of the sky, and his keen ears picked up someone joking about it. Joking. He stormed that direction, ready to tear someone limb from limb. "You! You're the one who nearly blew me up!" John could hear the growl in his voice. Maybe he was getting old or something, but it just wasn't funny at all. The man's hair nearly stood on end. "What? No, I mean, yes, but it was an accident. We're dealing with technologies that..." John tuned him out, captivated by the sight of an actual chair. He stalked over to it, took a delicate sniff, and didn't listen to the warning at all. It felt good, even though it was metal, and he leaned back, almost relaxing. Time eased away, and then a man's voice brought it sharply back into focus. "Major, think of where we are in the solar system." "Is he purring? I told him not to touch anything." With a snap, John did it, throwing up a map of their system onto the ceiling above him. He narrowed his eyes, forcing himself to coherent thoughts. "I did that?" "This changes everything," O'Neill said. "Major, go with Dr. Beckett. Stay with him until I send a security detail." Leaving the chair was hard, but John heaved himself out, letting his fingertips linger on the armrest. "Yes, sir," he said, scanning the small crowd of gaping people. "Which one is Beckett?" "That would be me." Beckett, the guy who tried to kill John, waved his hand in the air. John sighed, knowing this couldn't be good. "Can't I have him first?" the blonde guy in an orange fleece whined. "There's so much he could do." John tilted his head, assessing, searching for a hint of scorn. The guy seemed sincere, no smell of ridicule on him. John looked at the floor, avoiding their curious faces. "I could go back to my copter and pretend this never happened?" "Too late," O'Neill said with a groan. "Go with the doc." "Yes, sir." John wanted to protest, maybe cling to the chair. Right now, no one except O'Neill knew what John was, but by the end of the hour, everyone on this base would know, and the ridicule would start all over again. He was damn tired of it. At least at McMurdo, they left him alone. O'Neill put his hand on John's shoulder. "He won't hurt you." "That's what they all say." John shrugged the hand away. "I'll go. I follow orders," he said, daring O'Neill to challenge that. "Usually," O'Neill grinned, taking the sting out of the word. "Everyone back to the conference room. Beckett, keep him until I send for him." "Aye." John tucked his proverbial tail between his legs and slunk after the doctor, down circular hallways, past hurrying scientists, to what was obviously a small infirmary. "Up on the table. I'll need blood." Beckett pointed in a gurney. "Glasses off, please." "I'd rather not." John slid up on the gurney, trying to turn off a lifetime of painful memories that all started like this. "So I sat in a chair. Big deal." Beckett strode back to him, white lab coat flapping now. "It lit up for you like a Christmas tree. That means you have unique genes." Growing up with unique genes was hell. John shrugged off his jacket, reluctant to roll up his sleeves. "I never wanted to be special." "Well, laddie, it's not all bad. I have the gene, too." Beckett smiled at him. John narrowed his eyes in disbelief, taking another look and smell of the man. It just wasn't possible. Beckett motioned to a nurse. 4 vials, please." Slowly, John rolled up his right sleeve, keeping his arm turned so the hairiness of his arm was less visible. The nurse made no comment, just sticking him with a needle and drawing off the vials. It didn't hurt, and he made sure to control his breathing. After a quick band-aid, Beckett gave him a pat on the knee. "Now we'll get a complete exam." Beckett held out a robe. "Change in there." John drew a breath over his teeth, making a quick decision. No. Beckett frowned and edged closer. Did you not understand? I need to know everything about you. Send for my medical file. It's very complete. John hated how thick it was. He buttoned his shirt sleeve and shrugged on his jacket before hopping down. He would be outed before the end of the day, but would not go quietly into the humiliation this time. The general ordered me to go with you. He said nothing about getting naked. I'll wait over there for my detail. There was a long moment of silence. John went over to sit in a tattered folding chair, crossing his legs as if he were relaxed, but then Beckett moved to stand almost directly over him. Tamping down his instinct, John didn't even smile up at him. Oh, Beckett said. He ran his hand through his hair, taking several steps back. John knew the game was up. A slight smell of embarrassment crept through the air, and John nodded. Right, so, no to the exam. Curiosity got the better of him. How did you guess? Believe me, you pass for human, but I'm a geneticist. Beckett flushed at John's sharp look. Fine, it was the ears. They're not that pointy, John protested, wishing again he had the courage to bob them. He ducked his head, disgusted, but it switched to surprise when Beckett sat down next to him. Not many humans had the courage to sit next to him once they knew the truth. Major, Beckett said, reaching to touch him, but then drawing his hand back, you have no idea what this means. There is no way on God's green earth you could have the gene. You're right, I have no idea what you're talking about, John agreed, but he could see that Beckett was stunned. On the other hand, I'm the poster child for shit that shouldn't happen. He slid off his aviators, giving Beckett a good view of his eyes. This time, I may not cooperate with your urge to dissect me and that other guy's plans to use me. Dear God, man, I would never. Beckett looked stricken. And Rondi is harmless. He just wants you to turn on the odd ancient gadget. He shook his head, getting to his feet. This changes everything. Maybe I've been... No, I'm sure I was right about... But... John slid his sunglasses back on his face and settled in for a long day. Somewhere, the brass was fighting over who would get him next. Unfortunately, it looked like he was valuable again. He hoped, when they'd exiled him here, that it meant they didn't care any longer, that he could fade away into obscurity, no longer a military asset. He had no illusions that they'd actually discharge him, let him go free, but a small out-of-the-way base would be fine. Some peace and quiet, and he thought maybe McMurdo would be that spot. He'd been fine with it. He still got to fly, no one harassed him. He liked it here. May I please have a hair sample? A cutting of your nails? The question shook John out of his wool gathering. Aren't you going to sedate me and take what you want? Spinal fluid, biopsy, shave my head? The truth of what he expected slipped past his rule about keeping his mouth shut. It had been happening a lot lately. Well, he was getting old, and felines had a reputation for getting ill-tempered after 30. How about a snip of my liver? Beckett swallowed hard. Why did they sedate you? The odd question made John pause to think. They were afraid. Oh, that makes sense. Beckett winced. I'd hurt someone who shaved my head, too. For some odd reason, that made John laugh. Not the spinal tap? The hair? After a second, Beckett laughed a little. Man has to have his dignity. Dropping his voice to a growl, John let his temper out to play. I just pass for human. I'm not, remember? A dark flush worked its way up Beckett's throat. He looked like a deer caught in headlights. There was no telling what Beckett would have said, and John would never know, because a human bulldozer forced its way between them. Are you done? The blonde guy demanded. How long can it take to draw some blood? Shake your rattles. Carson! Beckett's eyes met John's over the guy's shoulder. He asked to wait here, Rodney. You heard the general. Yes, yes, whatever. They can walk on down to my lab when they show up. If they show up. O'Neill was yelling at Daniel when I left, and I have the feeling they'll be at it a while. The guy, Rodney, turned, facing John squarely. You'd rather come with me, right? Initialize some technology? Taken somewhat aback, John eased to his feet, just in case this crazy Rodney guy did something physical. I think Dr. Beckett plans to shave my head. The technology will have to wait. Rodney whirled the other direction. What? Has the cold finally driven you mad? Shave his head? I knew you were nothing but a voodoo priest. His hands started moving wildly, punctuating his insults, and Beckett fired back sarcastic comments of his own. And John took a very deep breath. He sort of liked these two guys. They weren't your average Air Force civilian contractors. He decided to take pity on Beckett, who was getting his skin ripped off by Rodney. Gently, John tapped Rodney on the shoulder. Rodney flailed John's direction, and John pocketed his aviators. His green cat eyes dilated and contracted in the light, and Rodney's mouth flapped open. I have to stay here. John tried to smirk, bracing himself for any reaction. Some people blathered on about God and abomination, some called him an animal, and some fainted. John shut Rodney's hanging jaw with one gentle finger. If you get a few things, I could look at them while I wait for my detail. Head whipping back and forth, Rodney pointed at Beckett. You will not shave him while I'm gone! Slumping down in the cold chair, John smothered his laughter. Beckett grinned at Rodney's retreating back. Annoying bugger. He had a few good points. John knew he'd regret it, but he was going to give Beckett a break. Yeah, you can have a few samples, but I'm not getting in that paper outfit. It's a deal. Beckett's smile could have lit up the room. I feel like I need to pinch myself. This has to be a crazy dream. Feline and ATA positive. You're a damn miracle. So exciting, John drawled, rolling his eyes. By the time the security detail arrived to escort John to some unknown location, the jig was up. He could smell it in the air. The Marines were nervous, more serious than a heart attack. Several nurses had seen John's eyes, so he wasn't surprised, just resigned to the usual stupid questions, unabashed hatred, and the occasional shove. "No, no, no, I'm not done by a long shot!" Rodney jumped up and got right in their faces. "Go tell O'Neill to—" "Rodney, let the men do their jobs." John wasn't going to bother with his aviators now until he went back outside, if he went back outside. He moved a touch slower than usual to let the Marines settle down. "Maybe I'll see you later." "As if I'm letting you out of my sight," Rodney started packing his gear. The Marines pointed, and John went, keeping his hands at his sides. No reason to provoke them. "Yeah, you're a good kitty," the Marine on the left muttered, and John marked him for trouble later. Everyone in the room stopped talking when the Marines opened the door for John. John's gaze went to O'Neill and stayed there. The general was the only one who mattered to John's future. He assumed an easy parade rest, not even pulling out a chair. "Major, I won't lie. This isn't going to be easy. As of right now, your orders are in limbo." O'Neill took a breath, and Rodney came bursting through the door, mostly yelling, and it was like the room exploded. Everyone had something to say. John shuffled until he could put his back to a wall and watch them argue, picking up a bit of conversation here and there. O'Neill smacked the back of Daniel's head, and Rodney stopped yelling at someone long enough to stab his finger in John's general direction. John leaned back slightly and crossed his arms, settling into wait. He was used to it. When his father had turned him over to the police, they'd made him wait for days. A 13-year-old kid, and it had taken them practically forever to get him transferred, in shackles, to the Center for Feline Control on the East Coast. It had been a hard lesson to learn, that his life didn't belong to him any longer, that he wasn't human, that he was now the property of the U.S. government. The waiting had driven those points home. He blinked lazily, amused at Rodney's continued insistence that John be posted to the labs immediately. O'Neill stood with a distinct air of disgust. "Shut up!" Everyone quieted down except Rodney until the red sweater lady pulled him into a chair. "Major Shepard is in the Air Force, which I also happen to belong to, and I'm sure we'll work out his status soon enough. In the meantime, Daniel, find him some quarters." O'Neill glared at Rodney. "The rest of you can wait until his clearance is decided and he's read into the project." John nearly laughed at that. Nothing like closing the barn door after the horse was out. "Dr. Weir, I'll put your suggestion forward to the proper people. Daniel, enough with the equal rights stuff. Not my decision." O'Neill met John's eyes. "I need a pilot to get back." "I'd be happy to fly you, sir." John would like another taste of the sky before they made him wait in this oversized igloo for a year or two while they poked him with needles and stuck him in chairs. "But you're a feline," the lady, Dr. Weir, said into the silence. "It seems a contradiction." "That's me, ma'am." John was keenly aware that he was one of a kind. A few felines were in the armed services, but he was the only pilot. "I never switch under stress." "Never?" Her eyebrows went up. "Never." John kept his voice cool and clear. "General?" O'Neill ruffled Daniel's hair. "I'll be back soon enough." He made his way around the table, took John by the arm, and they were moving back to the elevator. "Did you give Carson some blood to keep him happy?" "Of course, sir." John got his aviators out to combat the glare from the snow. "Did you want me to stay at McMurdo or return here?" "You better come back, or McKay will hunt you down." O'Neill barked a short laugh, shooing away the airman who wanted to help take them up top in the elevator. "I'd feel sorry for you, but he's been chasing me for years to turn on his who's-its and what's-its." That made John pause. "You have the gene?" "In spades." O'Neill flashed him a cocky grin. Welcome to a very elite club. Great, another one. John slumped his shoulders, not liking the sound of all this. Being a feline was bad enough. I gotta tell you, the amenities in my other club are few and far between. I know. O'Neill pushed the button to take them to the surface in the noisy elevator. But look at you, you're a pilot. Best job in the world. John got the hint to stop complaining. Yes, sir. He wouldn't make that mistake again, and he couldn't figure out why he'd made it in the first place. Chances were good that he was getting old, cranky, and someone would figure it out and have him put down. My apologies. They teach you to apologize for having opinions in cat school? To avoid answering that, John grabbed his gear from where it had been stored and picked up the pace, glad to see his copter. He strapped in, relieved he didn't have to show O'Neill the ropes. The blades started to turn as he flicked switch after switch, and the routine calmed him. O'Neill put on his helmet and mic. "You've never changed under stress?" he asked, loud and clear. Ramping the engines up, John threw him a grin. "Not even when they set me on fire." He double-checked everything, received clearance, and put his copter into the air. The flight back was remarkably quiet. Nothing tried to kill them, and John made sure to land without even a bump. O'Neill gave the signal to power down. "You can have someone ferry you back over in the morning." "Yes, sir." John would make sure to take his magazines. "Daniel will get you quarters. Honestly, I recommend you stay in them, avoid McKay, and try to keep one step ahead of Carson and his needles." O'Neill patted him on the shoulder. "I'll be back." "Thank you, sir." John went through his checklist, instead of watching O'Neill leave to catch a cargo plane to somewhere warmer. A few more hours of freedom, and then he'd be confined to the igloo. He was long past cursing his genetics, but this seemed like another stout kick to the testicles. A detail wasn't waiting for him at the igloo when he stepped down from his copter, and that threw him for a loop. He hated his stand there, looking like an idiot, so he retraced his steps to the elevator and tried to look at the airman like he knew what he was doing. "Welcome back, sir." "Thanks." John grimaced because he could hear the other pilot taking off with his copter. There went his ride, and he knew it wouldn't be coming back. He'd gotten attached to that one. "Here you are." The airman opened the metal door for him when they got to the bottom level. At a loss for where exactly he was supposed to go, John made a quick decision to find Daniel Jackson. The only question was where, so he wandered towards the chair. He wasn't surprised at all to see Rodney there. "Hey, Rodney," John said, embarrassed at how glad he was to see someone he knew. Rodney spun, face breaking into a huge grin that was a little intimidating. "Major, excellent. Please tell me no one else has co-opted your time yet." He rushed towards John, nearly bouncing on his toes. John lifted his duffel bag. "Just got here. You know where Daniel Jackson is?" He tried not to lean away, really hoping Rodney wasn't one of those people who liked to touch. "I should report to him." "Probably somewhere groaning over broken pots." Rodney rolled his eyes. "Do you have to wear the glasses? It's creepy." "Most people think my eyes are creepy, not the glasses." But John tucked them away. Everyone here knew he was feline anyway. "Better?" "Much." Rodney snatched up a tablet. "We'll go find Daniel, but I'm not letting you out of my sight." "Now that's creepy." John smirked at the glare he received, following Rodney through rounded corridors and crowded labs until they found a room full of whiteboards. Standing in front of one, marker tapping his lips, was Daniel. "Reporting is ordered, Dr. Jackson," John said, before Rodney could open up a salvo of insults. Daniel slowly turned, blinking rapidly behind glasses and saying nothing. "He probably doesn't remember who you are," Rodney muttered. "Archaeologists are not real scientists." John leaned Rodney's way, whispering, "I think he can hear you." "Call me Daniel, and hello." Daniel put the marker down, fussing with the cap. "Did I get you quarters?" "Not that I'm aware of," John said, watching Rodney roll his eyes and look disgusted. "Huh," Daniel frowned. "I thought I took care of that." "Daniel, wake up and smell the coffee. I need him in the labs, not standing here watching your two brain cells bang together for the next 20 minutes while you figure out where you stashed him." Rodney had a gift for insults. "Did you get him a room?" "Pretty sure," Daniel nodded. "Maybe." "Good God, I'm losing IQ points the more I stand here. The room next to mine is empty." Rodney made a shooing motion at the door. "I'll take him there. You can go back to whatever plane of existence your brain is currently residing on." Daniel smiled. "Sounds good. Later, we need to get together and discuss..." "Yes, yes, whatever." Rodney herded John back out into the hallway. "He should sleep more."
"You should give him a break."
John enjoyed Rodney's flashing blue eyes. "He's only an archaeologist." After a second, Rodney laughed. "There for a moment, I thought I might have to lump you with the morons who dare to try to teach me manners." "Not gonna happen." John stopped when Rodney did, watching him palm open a door. "No such thing as privacy here, huh?"
Oh, that. All the doors open to me. Don't tell. Ronnie looked slightly embarrassed. I swear it's only because things keep breaking and they keep sending me to fix them. As long as I can lock it, we're good. John went inside and tossed his duffel on the lower bunk. He could smell a past resident, but it was dim. The room was clean, if sparse. No furniture at all except the beds. I have a roommate? No. Rodney eyed the bunks with distaste. I could probably have it dragged somewhere else if you want. Nope. John liked top bunks. He'd had worth billeting than this, even if a desk or dresser would have been nice. Thanks. He stared at the door, concentrating, feeling something want to move. The door slid open. Bye. Rodney's eyes flicked from the door to him and back again. Oh, that was cool. Right. John wished there was a window. I'll catch up with you in a while. Haven't had my morning shower. Oh, really? You won't ditch me? Rodney looked oddly vulnerable for 1 second before trying to sneer. Not that I care, it's just... I'll want to eat. You can show me around. John unzipped his duffel, fishing out a towel. So, bye? Rodney sighed and trudged out the door. John wondered if the guy would stand in the hallway for the next couple of hours. Fumbling with his brain, he got the door to lock before stripping off his clothes. Out of habit, he folded everything neatly, removing everything except his dog tag. He stretched, shaking a little, glad for the privacy, and switched. Stretching again, he slashed his tail back and forth, wishing he could go for a run or a hunt or really anywhere. He paced the room, sniffing and imprinting before launching himself at the top bunk. Jumping up and down from increasing distances kept him amused for a few minutes, and then he flopped to his back and put his paws in the air. Some sunshine would have been nice. To Rodney's credit, he wasn't lounging in the hallway when John finally emerged. The speed at which he showed up, however, gave John a clue to the fact that there were active surveillance cameras. Hey, Rodney was somewhere between acting casual and desperate. Hungry? Starved. John noted a few passing people staring at him, but he kept moving. What's good? MREs? Rodney trotted a little to get in front, and John got the message to slow down. He was always hungry after a switch. Rodney turned a quick corner, and they queued up for a small selection of fresh food and a stack of MREs. John took one of everything before retreating to a corner where he could put his back to the wall. Rodney joined him with a couple of MREs. You are hungry. Rodney sat down across from him. Figured you were anorexic since you're so skinny. Were you born without the gene for social graces? John laughed, wasting no time tucking into his food. Rodney shrugged, mouth full, and they ate without chatting. John was starting to think he could like this guy. It didn't happen very often, but Rodney had no smell of fear or lying. It was rare to find someone like him. You ate like it was your last meal, Rodney glowered at him. How do you stay so thin? Feline. John wiped his mouth and slugged back most of a bottle of water. Now that he was full, he glanced at some of the people in the cafeteria. Eyes shifted away, and guilt showed on several faces. Did they stare at me the entire time? It was like watching some sort of wolf go at a carcass. Rodney gave a mock shudder. There's finally someone here with worse eating habits than mine. John didn't mean to, but he burst out laughing. He smothered it, but Rodney grinned at him. They moved as one, ditching their trash and going to the hallway. Rodney suddenly looked worried, so John threw it out there. Should we go play with the doodads now? Rodney's hand moved a mile a minute. It's vital research. He paused. And yes. Cool. John thought it had to be better than doing nothing, and he'd had a nap already. You got snacks? Hello, genius here. Rodney moved fast now, and John hustled to keep up with him. Back through more labs, they didn't stop until John could smell the unique scent of Rodney all over everything. It wasn't an office, but it was bigger than the smaller labs. Nice place. Pretty sure you're not allowed to shackle me to that bench to get me to stay, so don't try. Only in my dreams. Then Rodney flushed red. I mean, I'd never. Don't be stupid. Anyway, I'd use zip ties. I can steal those from the security guys. I'm so comforted. John found a stool and slouched onto it. You do not want me to gnaw off my arm. Or your arm, he grinned. Rodney went pale. No, I don't. But there was no fear smell. Let's crank up the space heater and get busy. The cat inside John liked that idea. I thought cats were nocturnal. I'm going. But I haven't even scratched the surface. John sighed and yawned. The last 10 or so hours had been interesting, and he'd been surprised how well they'd got along, but it was time to go to his quarters. I need fur time before bed. I'll catch you later. Rodney's mouth dropped open. John played that back and winced. He must be tired. Sorry, I should have said I need sleep. Later. Fur time? What? This is important research. I don't have time for you to laze about and eat catnip. Do you have any? John prowled close to him and sniffed deeply, liking the scent of him. Rodney froze in mid-rant, his eyes dilating. John flicked his tongue over his lower lip, unable to resist teasing. You get some nip and we'll talk. Later. Before Rodney could kick up another storm, John bolted for freedom. He'd had a good time, mostly, except for that one shiny bit that had sprayed in with fire suppressant, but Rodney was like the Energizer Bunny, unstoppable, and John needed sleep. He still couldn't believe he had the run of the outpost, no guards at all. Tomorrow he might explore a little, see if he could go jogging. It was hard to tell the night from day, stuck in this igloo, but his inner furball was itching, so it was time to go to bed. They'd foisted any number of stupid classes off on him at the center, but the one that stuck with him was Manage Your Inner Feline. It had sounded stupid, but the instructor had been a cop with years of experience in stressful situations. Switching could happen spontaneously under stress, but the cop had a theory. If you let your cat out every day, it was much more controllable. It worked for John. Twice a day, whether it was convenient or not, he gave in to fur time, and his cat never gave him trouble. They had a truce. He knew it was ridiculous to think of the cat as a separate entity, but he did. There had been classes in that, too. In his experience, the felines who denied their cat or ignored their cat were in for a world of hurt. John prowled around his room, poking with his mind. After hours of handling ancient technology, he had a much better sense of what he could do and what it could do, which was just about anything. He was drawn to the area behind the bunks, so he spent 15 good minutes shoving them against the other wall. Military issue, heavy, but he made sure they were straight before going to the spot. Squatting down, he reached, seeing no seams, but as soon as his hand touched the wall, a drawer slid open. He dragged his fingers up and found 5 in total, big too. Smiling, he unpacked his duffel, organizing his clothes and putting all his books and magazines in the top drawer. Satisfied, he stuffed the duffel in the bottom one. Not a cozy room by any definition, but he'd rather have room to pace than furniture cluttering up the place. Now, he stripped off his clothes, shut his eyes, and switched. He pandered to himself by pacing. It was a shock when the door slid open. He drew back and then cautiously approached, ready to dive under the bed. Right in front of the door was a big bowl of milk. Funny. John was tempted to drop some scat in it. He shut the door and locked it with his mind, very cool, and then went back to pacing. Over the years, he'd taken his share of teasing, but he never backed down, and emptying his anal glands in a locker or two usually ended the prank wars. It was disheartening that it had started so soon. He couldn't say he was surprised, however. It was damn strange not knowing whose command he was under and what they expected of him. No one had said a word about him helping out Rodney. No one had cared, but maybe he should have made a greater effort to find a commander or a colonel or someone who outranked him. When he'd been sold to the Air Force, allowed to attend the academy, he'd been told in no uncertain terms that the rank he achieved wouldn't be real and he wouldn't make it past major. He hadn't cared a damn bit. All he wanted to do was fly. Flying didn't look like it was in his future, just metal chairs and gadgets that liked his brain. He jumped up to the top bunk, glad it now faced the door, and curled into a ball, putting his tail over his eyes. When the door chimed, John grumbled while extending his senses to find out who was on the other side. Before he could smell them, the door helpfully blinked transparent and he saw Rodney staring down at the bowl of milk with a quizzical look on his face. With a grunt, John opened the door, knowing Rodney would come right inside. Rodney did, stopping barely past the door. It was always tricky, that moment when his coworker saw him in his fur. He tried to avoid it altogether, but if Rodney was going to be a pest, he could get used to the fur in the air. John yawned, flicked his tail rhythmically, and waited for the blowback. Really? You're going to laze about all day? Rodney spun in a small circle. Where'd your stuff go? John heaved himself down, noticing that Rodney didn't run out the door screaming, and went to the wall. He touched it with his paw, and the drawer slid right open. Wow! Rodney rushed over, peering down. Wait, does my room have those? Damn it, it doesn't matter because I don't have the gene. He huffed in annoyance. God, this is unfair. I could get so much done if I did, and you big... Whipping around, John crowded him, chuffing and chirping. Okay, so I won't say that. Rodney lifted his hands in surrender. Milk? Really? What asshole left that for you? Circling him, John had to control the urge to swat at Rodney's leg, just to make him yowl. Rodney smelled good, and he wasn't scared at all. He just kept talking like John would answer. It was almost more bizarre than the people who fainted. "Major, work, now!" Rodney pointed at the door. "Unless you have some yarn that is far more interesting?" That was low, and John grinned, flashing his teeth. Rodney didn't even seem to notice. "Do I need to brush you? You still have your dog tags on, I notice. Don't you worry about choking? Good God, I should have brought a haunch of deer." He rubbed his forehead, wandering over to the bottom bunk and sitting down, slightly hunched. "Just my luck. I finally have someone to initialize ancient artifacts, and he's more interested in napping." John strolled to him and gave him a headbutt to the orange fleece covering his belly. Rodney reached, hesitated, and then grabbed a pointy ear. John yowled dramatically, flopping half his body into Rodney's lap. "You weigh a metric ton," Rodney oofed and pushed to no avail. "If I suffocate, O'Neill is going to be highly upset." Then he sighed. "So he won't care, but I'll be upset." It was a good point, and John shimmied up on the bunk, putting his hand on Rodney's thigh. He shut his eyes and purred. "You realize no one likes me, right? Not even the scrawny Czech guy?" Rodney took a deep breath and then put his hand on John's head, petting him with just the right touch. "Also, your teeth are really long." John whistled, enjoying how Rodney blinked in surprise. He knew those things, but he didn't care. Cats liked who they liked, and his cat liked Rodney. John liked Rodney. He couldn't even say why. "Cougars are weird," Rodney muttered. "Do you always eat this much?" Rodney asked, waving his hand at John's tray. "Switching takes a lot of energy." John leaned forward. "Do you have any deer haunch? It's my favorite." "I no longer believe anything you say," Rodney filled with his MRE, seemingly bored. John made sure to keep his voice low. "Do you have a family member who's feline?" Rodney slurped his coffee first. "No, but my great aunt was remarkably hirsute. Maybe her father was a bear. She used to shave every day." "I'm horrified by that." John didn't understand at all, and he wanted to. "Why aren't you scared of me?" "Should I be? I thought you were sort of okay, not overbearing like some military guys. You're also a bit of a geek with your Star Trek references, but if you plan to hunt me down and strip me for meat, I'd like a warning and an hour's head start." Rodney crossed his arms. "2 hours. "Still wouldn't save you," John grinned. "Okay, whatever. I just never met anyone who wasn't horrified or terrified or both." "Morons." Rodney shrugged. "Are you done? I've wasted half the day with your grooming, fur flying everywhere, eating large quantities, and now with the non-stop talking." "And that was just you," John liked teasing him, seeing him glare. "Okay, let's head to your lab, but are you sure there's no one I should report to?" "O'Neill is in charge. You could go see Dr. Weir, but she's not military. There's a sergeant who's a pain in the ass." Rodney took his trash, John one step behind. "I really don't know. You could ask Daniel." "Okay." John would do that after he spent a couple of hours helping Rodney. "It is not an electric toothbrush," Rodney snatched it from him. "It's important technology." "If you have tooth decay, I crunch bones to keep my teeth clean." John loved it when Rodney's eyes widened. Rodney edged away from him. "Okay, fine, it's a toothbrush." "No, it's actually a part for something." John pursed his lips. "Medical?" He tried to find words to convey the images. "Like some sort of scanner, maybe? If I see it, I'll know where it goes." "That's reassuring." Rodney was looking daggers at him. "Toothbrush my ass." John grinned and eased up from his stool. He took a stretch and then said, "I'm going to find Daniel, see if he has a real assignment for me." "This is real." Rodney waved another part at him. "Come on, one more." Shrugging, John got out of there and unfortunately nearly bowled over Beckett, who looked entirely too pleased to see him. "Major, I was about to send a squad in to rescue you from Rodney's clutches." Somehow Beckett managed to get John moving towards the infirmary. "I was wondering if we could discuss your results." "Why?" John was immediately suspicious. "No doctor has ever said anything to me besides hold still and bend over." Beckett turned big blue sad eyes on him. "I'm sorry, lad. After I read your file, I was amazed you were willing to even give me blood." "Practice, Doc, practice." John hated pity, but he could see Beckett was truly sympathetic. "So I get a pass on all other tests in the future?" No. Beckett at least was honest. "For this program, I have to run a number of tests regularly." "Damn." John meant that. Since Rodney wasn't able to answer the question, John went after Beckett. "Who's the commander of this base?" General O'Neill, whatever instructions he gave you, I'd follow them. John stopped walking. He told me to avoid you. Oh, Beckett slowed but didn't stop, forcing John to start after him. Too late for that, huh? And he grinned. Tempted to take off running the other way, John was nonetheless curious about his result, and against his will, he found himself liking Beckett. They moved straight through the infirmary, nurses whispering, to a tiny office in the back. Beckett pointed at the coffee pot. Help yourself. Thanks. John got a cup to give his hand something to fiddle with while he got the bad news. Am I dying of cancer? Good God, no, man. Beckett opened three laptops and started clicking. Your case is a fascinating one. John wanted to cover his eyes and whimper. Please, my life is not fascinating. I'm a poster boy for the feline underground movement. See that shepherd feline? Run for your life when the government comes to call. Blinking several times, Beckett frowned. There's a movement? I'd tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. John hoped there was a movement, but he'd be the last feline on Earth to know about it. You used humor as a defense mechanism. I'll make a note. Beckett went back to studying his data. You shouldn't have both genetic mutations. It's not possible, but there you sit. I read in your file that your cat is a puma. Cougar, yes. John took a sip of coffee and grimaced at the taste. This is awful. Oh, aye. Beckett might possibly have smirked for a half second, and John liked him even more. So I'm a talented cat. What's the big deal? I wish you had years of schooling so I could explain it. Beckett's eyes flicked from screen to screen. Can your cat work ancient technology? Yes. John wished he could flick his tail in irritation. No, you may not have blood samples while I'm in my fur. That got Beckett's attention. He sat up a bit straighter. May I ask why not? Are you a vet? John crossed his legs and reviewed the path to his room and his locked door. Do you know how much it hurts to be stabbed repeatedly by a needle with no hope of blood in sight? Beckett opened his mouth and then shut it. That's a very good point. He frowned. They didn't use a vet? Of course not. Just some nurse who thought my neck was a good spot to start jabbing, and she was one of the smarter ones. John wasn't doing that again. I'm through being Mr. Nice Kitty. I've got a black mark, no possibility of career advancement, and now they've stuck me in an igloo. I have no incentive to cooperate. You aren't worried they'll... Beckett stopped, turning somewhat pale. Put me down? Gas me? John snarled. They'd kept him in line with that threat before, but he was done with that fear. His family had thrown him away like garbage. His only friend had died in Afghanistan, and they had no leverage now. I'm not afraid any longer. Anyway, I'm an old puss. Beckett's eyes bulged. You're in excellent health. I will not have you talking like that. He sighed loudly and shut one laptop after another. Have you been read into the program? No. John wasn't sure he wanted to be after the hints the ancient technology had been giving him for the past 2 days. O'Neill told me to wait and avoid you and McKay. Good luck avoiding Rodney. Beckett smiled now. You have the strongest gene I've seen since I took a peek at O'Neill's. Rodney's like a bloodhound when it comes to his technology. He does keep tracking me down. John eased to his feet and put the horrible coffee on Beckett's desk. Anything else? Beckett shrugged. I suppose much of it can wait. If your knee aches, see me for Tylenol. John doubted he would, but that made him think. Is there a track, a gym, some place to work out? Has no one even given you a tour? Beckett got to his feet with a grumble. I suppose Rodney has kept you locked away, turning on his gadgets. Pretty much. John wasn't going to criticize Rodney, and some of that stuff had been pretty cool. Do you have time to show me around now, or do you have patients who need poking? I'll make time. Least I can do since I nearly blew you out of the sky. Beckett flushed, grinning. Good point. John was going to call that marker in often. I broke my best sunglasses because of you. I'll find you another pair. Beckett didn't sound all that guilty. Do you exercise daily? I did. John needed it to keep his life in balance. He ambled along next to Beckett, enjoying the nickel tour. The base was bigger than it looked, having multiple levels. There wasn't really a gym, but there was a room with a treadmill and a few free weights. John would admit to some disappointment. Maybe I can run outside. Are you daft? Beckett shook his head. You're no snow leopard. John shrugged, agreeing, but he had to do something. Maybe Rodney would jog with me. Maybe you'll sprout wings and fly, Beckett laughed, moving the tour along until they ended up back in the chair room. John touched it with a finger, spinning it. Beckett moved closer to him. No samples? I can get you some scat. John grinned at Beckett's grimace. Urine? Scent mark? Now Beckett looked interested. Some urine might be interesting. A first sample? I'll be gentle. You could trim my nails. They're long. John flexed his hand, seeing Beckett's eyes widen. I promise not to scratch you too much. Deal, Beckett nodded. Let's head back to the infirmary. Now John balked. He wasn't sure he felt comfortable there. What if I yowl or something? Are your nurses going to faint? No. Beckett seemed to take a deep breath. All of us have seen a fair share of odd things working here. Strangely enough, John believed him. I don't like switching in front of people. He'd done it enough, but he'd never liked it. Private room. Beckett's eyes gleamed with excitement. Please? Tell me every procedure before you do it. John would never forget or forgive the nurse who had tried for a stool sample. Don't assume I know what you're doing. And I'll give you a lollipop. Beckett waved his hand at a command motion. It'll be grand. Rolling his eyes, John nonetheless followed him to the infirmary. Beckett was the first reasonable doctor John had ever met, but he'd keep a close eye on the nurses. They couldn't be trusted. There was no actual door, but Beckett pulled a curtain, and John wondered how many security cameras were taping him as he took his clothes off. Technically, he could switch with his clothes on, but the boots usually got hung up in his paws, so if he had time, he undressed. He took a moment, hoping he hadn't made a mistake with Beckett, and then switched before he changed his mind. He slunk under the curtain, sitting down and flicking his tail in irritation as everyone stared at him, jaws dropped, dumbfounded. It seemed they'd never seen a cougar before, and with a grunt, he padded over to Beckett. Well, that's... Holy crap! Beckett's eyes were as big as 50-cent pieces. His scent ramped up to fear, but he didn't flee. Yes, John knew he was a large cougar, but he was still sleek, and he thought his coloring was nice, if a bit darker than normal. He chirped, trying to reassure them, and one of the nurses fainted. Crouching down, he covered his eyes with a paw. He hated that. Help him and everyone else clear the infirmary. Move it, people. Beckett sounded as if he were in charge. Yes, yes, get moving. John waited until they were gone before prowling around Beckett, sniffing and tempted to mark him. You do know how to make an entrance. Beckett stared down at him. And you're a big bugger. For some reason, I pictured you smaller. Maybe Rodney could explain about mass ratios later. John patted Beckett on the thigh, trying to encourage him to get on with it. Finally, Beckett nodded. Right then, let's get busy. Pacing seemed a good answer to that, but he stopped when Beckett called him close and took a mouth swab with a large Q-tip. The first of many, and they tasted nasty, but he behaved, not even snapping it in half once. Beckett talked nonstop, explaining and asking John to hold still. They were fine until Beckett got out a pair of clippers and moved in on John's body. John backed up and kept backing, ignoring the platitudes. The urge to flee down the hallway pounded at him. Carson! Rodney yelped. Stop! Beckett froze, and John would tell himself later that it was his cat who was overjoyed to see Rodney. John ran right to him, knocking him down and sprawling on him, purring up a storm. No! Rodney yelled, arms going up. He's not hurting me! No! John flattened himself even further and licked Rodney in the face. I think he's tasting him. Carson rushed to stand over the both of them. Put your guns down. We had a wee misunderstanding is all. I told you not to try to cut his hair. Rodney pushed at John's head. Get off me, you big lummox. You smell. Offended, John did as he was told, moving to sit directly in front of Rodney. Their guns didn't waver, but John wasn't scared. He was tempted to lick his balls in their faces. Really, go away. You might accidentally shoot me. Rodney kept one hand on John's head. There's nothing to see here. Dr. Beckett? We're fine. Please go on with you now. John waited until they were gone and then swatted at Rodney's legs, tripped him, and sat on him. Beckett started laughing, and Rodney cursed a blue streak in 2-3 languages. John purred, chirped, finally rolling to his back on the floor. The major seems fond of you, Beckett said. Cats like me. Rodney gently tugged John's ear. You have to be more careful, Carson. His body language was screaming that he was scared. Grumbling, John batted at him. Rodney waved his hand. Fine. Not scared, but not willing to get his head shaved either. I just wanted a sample of fur, Beckett sighed. Good thing you came along. Rumors were flying that you were dissecting him. I didn't believe it, of course. John would eat you first, but I was worried because I know you're a moron around animals. Rodney raised his hand. Give me some scissors. Have a sample bag ready. Flattening his ears, John tried to slink away. Rodney rolled his eyes. I'll snip some belly fur. You'll be fine. Groaning, John collapsed on his side and wiggled until he was on his back with his paws in the air. He didn't like it, but he'd hold still. Is everything okay in here? Jumping straight up, John flattened his ears, not wanting an audience. This time, Rodney got in front of him. Yes, Daniel, everything is fine. I hope so. You know how mad Jack gets if I break his men when he's gone. Daniel kept his eyes on John, and John returned the favor. There was no fear smell on him, not yet. Daniel smiled. Nice fur. Don't compliment him. Rodney scritched the base of John's tail, which was completely rude, but made John turn to chirp at him. He knows he's beautiful. Daniel laughed. Never hurts to let someone know. He extended his hand, palm out. Friends? Rodney snorted, but John was intrigued. No one had ever done that, and John paced over to him and took a sniff. Daniel smelled of coffee, books, ink, and whiteboard. John chuffed and put his paw on Daniel's hand, careful not to scratch. Nice to meet you. Daniel looked very serious. Ducking his head, John whistled, taking his paw back. He wasn't sure what was going on in this igloo, but he was meeting some very interesting people. People who he didn't instantly hate. People who didn't seem determined to hate him from the first. He would never fool himself that there was a place for him to fit in, to feel at home, but this place could be a hell of a lot worse. John wound his way back to Rodney and sat near him. Can I get my sample now? Beckett sounded almost pathetic. All this for a bit of fur. It felt good to run, even if it was just a treadmill under a ton of ice. Rodney had pronounced John nuts and gone off to his lab. After the stress of yesterday's events in the infirmary, John felt like he needed to run or explode. His cat agreed with him, even if his knee wasn't happy with all the bounce in this old treadmill that had seen better days. At 3 miles, John quit, backing down to a walk. When he was gasping less, he moved to the weights and did some reps. He was sitting on an old bench, working his arm with some curls, when 3 Marines stepped inside, looking the room, and John, over. The instinct to snarl kept John from smiling. He moved the weight up and down, watching them watch him. He was trapped in this tiny room, but he'd face larger odds and come out on top. "Doing okay, sir?" one of the Marines asked. The tone was mild, not full of scorn. "Yep." John switched to his other arm, every muscle tense in case of an attack. They wandered closer, and John straightened, wishing for his sidearm. The dark-haired one stepped into an easy parade rest. "That cap thing is pretty cool. I bet you could take out a Goa'uld with no trouble." "How about a Jaffa?" the tall one asked. This set off a round of mock betting and discussion of the fighting points of a cougar versus some sort of warrior that John had never heard of. Finally, when they seemed to be losing steam, he put the weight down on the floor. "Guys, I'm on TDY. Haven't been cleared for anything but sitting in my room watching the paint peel." "Shit, you didn't hear anything, right? O'Neill is gonna kill us." All three beat a path out the door, and John breathed a sigh of relief. Those Jaffa, or whatevers, had to be hard to kill from the sound of things, and John hoped he never met one. He scooped up his towel, deciding to call it good enough. A shower was next, some fur time and food, in that order. Unfortunately, his nap was interrupted by Rodney, who followed the theory that ringing the door chime 8 times was better than once. Cranky, John jumped down and nosed the door open. "Get out of that fur. We have work to do." Rodney's eyes were bloodshot. He smelled like old coffee and not enough deodorant, and he had dark rings under his eyes. "Important work." John doubted it. Using his paws, he herded Rodney to the lower bunk and then shoved him on it. Rodney collapsed with a thump, head on the pillow, almost instantly curling. John wondered how many days it had been since Rodney had slept, and then he wiggled his way onto the bunk and found a spot for himself. "You smell good," Rodney mumbled, cuddling into John's long back and throwing an arm over him. John held out until Rodney snored, and then he purred. Keeping watch over Rodney, John slept some more himself and then grew hungry. He slithered off the bed, switched, and dressed, heading down to the cafeteria. Loading up on food, he went back, sitting on the floor by the bed and eating. Rodney slept on, oblivious. John covered him with a blanket, grabbed a magazine, and let the hours roll by. Not many times in John's life had his cat demanded a switch, but seeing Rodney twitch and mutter like he might wake up soon, his cougar stretched and prodded. John towed off his sneakers, shucked out of his clothes, and let it happen. No one smart argued with a cougar, even if it was on the inside. "God, you're furry," Rodney mumbled, not even opening his eyes, but getting double handfuls of fur. John crawled up and sprawled on him. Rodney grunted and then started stroking him. It felt so good. John almost started kneading him, but managed to control it. No, do not make starfish paws on me. You'll shred me. Rodney stroked over and back across John's cheekbones. You're such a big kitty. John narrowed his eyes, but he was too blissed out from Rodney's magical hands to complain. He'd never let anyone touch him like that, and he wasn't sure why his cat had picked Rodney for the job. You're not still upset about your fur, are you? Rodney had snipped away a fair amount of belly hair for Carson, so John obliged by rolling to show off the spot. Skimming his hand down, Rodney furrowed his brow. It grew back when you changed? Chirping, John headbutted him in the chest and then jumped off the bed. They'd cut his hair off several times, knowing it would regrow when he switched. No military haircut for him. His hair mostly looked the same, out of control. Rodney stretched and swung his legs over the side of the bed. Need coffee. Shower, too. Full of energy, John raced around the small room, using a wall to gain greater momentum. I'm getting dizzy. Rodney stood and yawned. With a sudden move, he slapped John on the butt as he ran by. John jumped, flipped, and took Rodney's legs out from under him. Rodney yelled, I'm getting a spray bottle! John licked him in the face. Rodney struggled to his knees and crawled to the door, where John let Rodney use him as a brace to get up. The door opened, and Rodney stumbled out in the hallway. John nearly followed. He wanted to go out. He really did. Well, come on, I'll see if I can find you some meat. Crouching down, John wasn't afraid, but he knew the bad things that could happen. Rodney hurried back to him and tugged one of John's ears. Major, here's the truth. You are never leaving this outpost except to go with me to Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado. Your life, your destiny, if you will, is here now. People are going to have to get over it. Just act casual. And don't bite anyone. Also, I'm pretty sure I can find some bones. That made John's ears perk up. He wanted to believe that this was his last assignment before he was retired to the center to teach classes to kits, but it was hard. So many bases, so many combat zones, and he wasn't that old. Rodney patted him on the head. Think about it. I'm going to take a quick shower. The door shut, and John sat there. He switched to his skin, hoping it would make the decision easy, but it didn't. To roam around in his fur would be awesome. Outside of a desperate combat situation where it had been kill or be killed and his claws had been coated in blood, just walk around like a human? A short time later, the door chimed, and John switched again before opening it. Crossing his arms, Rodney glared. So, are you a cougar or a big chicken? He started down the hallway without a backward look, clucking and crowing. Somewhere between furious and amused, or a blend of the two, both cougar and man, John growled his loudest and took off after him. Rodney glanced back and started running. He was slow, very slow, but John stayed behind, swatting at Rodney's heels, making him screech. It was the most fun John could ever remember having that didn't involve going fast. Pulling to a stop at the door of the cafeteria, Rodney rounded on him. Stop that! If he eats McKay, I'm gonna laugh. No way we could be that lucky. John laughed in his chirpy way, and Rodney glared at the two Marines. Go guard something. They walked off laughing, and Rodney pointed at John. You should be on my side. He hurried on into the cafeteria, but John paused. The hallway was one thing, but this... Major Chickenhawk, please report to the cafeteria, Rodney intoned. Stalking inside, John flattened his ears at the gasps. He watched Rodney get a tray and coffee, and then followed him to a table. It was tempting to slip under and hide, but Rodney still looked smug, so John jumped in the chair across from him and put his big paws on the table. If he could have, John would have roared, but cougars didn't, so he snapped his teeth. Yes, I'm very impressed at Kitty's bravery, Rodney rolled his eyes. We may make a big cat out of you yet. Flexing his claws, John lowered his head to stare him down. Okay, that might have been mean. Rodney swallowed hard. Here. He tossed a sausage, and John snapped it out of the air. But that's all you're getting. Rodney tucked into his food, and John was jealous. He strolled back to the line and sat in front of the sausages until the airman serving got up the courage to look at him. Did you, want some? The airman choked out. John smacked his lips. The airman prepared a plate of sausage, added some eggs, and took it to the table across from Rodney. John thanked him with a whistle and protected his plate from Rodney with a well-placed paw. Dogs have owners, cats have servants, Rodney laughed. I would have done it. It had been more fun getting the airman to do it, and John ate everything but the plate, giving it a good lick when he was done. He was thirsty now, but he hated coffee when he was in his fur. He wandered back to the line, grabbed a bottle of water, and was glad when Rodney scooped up a bowl. Licking his lips when he was done drinking, John rubbed his wet face on Rodney's thigh. "That is disgusting," Rodney shoved him away. "Can we work now?" Giving a shake, John sat on his haunches and tried to look sad. Rodney frowned down at him. "I suppose you need exercise. Want me to find some Marines for you to chase?" He sighed. "No, they might scream, and that would be bad. Play in the snow?" Now that was a good idea, and John smiled like a cougar does. "Scary, but I'm taking that as a yes." Rodney went back towards their rooms, and John ambled along behind him, curious to peek in Rodney's room. He talked the door into staying open, and sat right inside while Rodney threw on layer after layer of clothing, ending with a huge coat lined with coyote fur. John had never met a coyote, but he was fairly sure he wouldn't like them. The room was like a glimpse into Rodney's mind. There was stuff everywhere, but it was organized into some system that only Rodney understood. John beat Rodney to the elevator, causing the airman to go pale. Rodney threw him out, and they went towards the surface. "I have no idea how you've put up with these idiots over the years without seriously biting one of them. You're a cougar, not a dinosaur or a gold. Now those are scary." Now was not the time to switch and explain about how he didn't know what Rodney was talking about. The further they went up, the colder it got, and John hoped he had his winter coat on, too. As soon as the door opened, he gave in to the excitement and dashed out, startling everyone within distance and provoking a few raised guns. Rodney yelled at everyone to stop being idiots and lumbered after him. John suddenly understood how felines lost control to their cat. He wanted to run wild, growl, roll, and generally bite things. Then a snowball came out of nowhere and clocked him in the head. Ha! Turning on his tail, John streaked at him. Rodney held very still and then pummeled him with another snowball. John jumped in the air and disappeared into the snow. His blood pounded and he couldn't resist a yowl or two. When he surfaced like a submarine, there was more people than just Rodney, and they all threw snowballs at him. It was completely unfair. And fun. Oh, the fun. He hadn't run wild since... He jumped as high as he could and swatted the snowballs that came at him. Running fast, he took Rodney down, dodged, and slid into another drift. "Not fair!" Rodney groaned and thrashed, snow flying everywhere. Laughter filled the air, and John poked his head up to get another lay of the land. Most everyone was gathered around Rodney, and it was wrong, very wrong, but John stalked closer, ears flat, tail twitching. "Where is he?" And he took them all down, reveling in the shouts of surprise and groans. When the carnage was over, he climbed to the highest point, the top of a snowplow, and settled in to laugh at them. "You get down now, that's high up there," Rodney wagged his snow-covered glove at him. "It's dangerous." And the cold wind blew through John's fur, and the sky was very blue, and John lifted his head, whistling his loudest. The only thing that could make this day better was a rabbit, or a deer, or an elk, not that John had ever been allowed to hunt much of anything. "Fine, freeze your tail off." Two jumps, and John was down, pressing into Rodney's side and herding him back towards the elevator. Several people laughed and gave him a smile before going back to their jobs, wherever those were. John didn't quite know what to make of it. He felt alive, blood pumping, pulse beating in his throat. The boredom of years pacing in a tiny room sloughed away, and his cat, no, John was happy. John the cougar, John the man, was happy, and it didn't seem possible. "You totally cheated." Rodney brushed some snow off John's back and head. John shook all over, whiskers still trembling from excitement. He smoothed his chin along Rodney's thigh, tingling from the jumping and chasing. Rodney laughed. "Stop that." John waited until the door was open, and then gave Rodney a headbutt. Rodney pulled John's ear, and the pushing and shoving continued down the hallway. "Rodney?" They both stopped, looking at anything other than each other. Dr. Weir had her arms crossed and her eyebrows up. "Major Shepherd, I presume?" Sitting on his butt, John blinked at her, smelling her fear and not wanting to send her screaming down the hallway. Rodney waved his hand at John. "Yes and yes, we were outside taking atmospheric readings." She frowned. "In a snowbank?" A bit of water dripped off Rodney's coat onto John's tail, and he flicked it away. John wondered how soon they could make a break for it. "Well, no. Rodney was a terrible liar. We might have thrown a few snowballs. All in good fun. Did you need something?" "Major Shepherd can throw snowballs?" She looked confused now. Oh, never mind. I tracked you down to tell you that General O'Neill will be here in about a week. I'm hopeful that Daniel and I will have a breakthrough with the translations by then. Rodney nodded. Any word on Major Shepard's situation? Don was grateful that Rodney had asked. She shook her head. I suspect the center is giving General O'Neill a hard time, and the military keeps a tight leash on felines. She flushed. Sorry. Poor choice of words there. Thoroughly disgusted, John felt like peeing on her shoes. He was the only feline in the Air Force, last he knew, and he was sick to death of their tight leash. The center is nothing more than a petting zoo, and the Air Force needs to come to grips with the fact that Major Shepard has the gene. He's mission essential. Rodney looked as furious as John felt. Anger competed with disgust, and he'd had enough of this conversation. She had no idea how insulting she was. Oh, one more thing. Our mission commander is going to be Colonel Marshall Sumner. I've heard he's tough but fair, Weir said. Shock went through John like a bolt of electricity. He actually jerked. John? Rodney asked, turning to him. You okay? Nodding, John wanted to switch. Right now. He clamped his jaw shut and nudged Rodney on the leg. I think John's cold. We'll meet later? Rodney took a tentative step toward their rooms, and John tried not to lean into Rodney's thigh. Let's meet for dinner. I'll call if you forget. Dr. Weir smiled at them both. Good to see you again, Major. As soon as your status is decided, you and I have a lot to discuss. Grinding his teeth, John made it to his room, ignoring Rodney's questions, comments, and complaints. Once inside, he headed straight for the shower and switched mid-stride. I'll give you some privacy, Rodney muttered from behind him near the door. John paused, ashamed that he hadn't thought to hide his switch. Thanks for the day, McKay. Rodney flushed. Go shower and lock this door. He seemed to give himself a shake before he left. Locking the door, John went to the shower. He made the water as hot as he could stand and bowed his head underneath the spray. Colonel Sumner hated felines. Hated them. His reputation was legendary for the depth of his hatred. Rodney had said John was mission essential. Dr. Weir had said that Sumner was in charge of that mission. She was only waiting until John's assignment was official before reading him in on the mission. No. Just no. He wasn't going on a mission with a commander who hated him. He wasn't. They couldn't make him. They could put him down like a rabid dog, but they couldn't make him. Shivering, he crouched down in the shower and fought for control. His cougar wanted out, wanted to scream and pace, and he... switched. He jumped out of the shower, racing to the wall, jumping and snarling. Around and around he went, wishing he could destroy something, shred it. John! Rodney pounded on the door. John! He'd never switched under stress. Never. Until now. And he could see clearly the problem. He'd had fun. He'd almost felt human. It was too damn much to keep under wraps. He nosed open the door, but laid his ears back, hissing. This was not fun and games now. Rodney raised his hands. Let me help. John snarled, flashing his teeth and shutting the door. He stomped back to the shower and sat under the water until his fur was sopping. His cat gave in, and he switched. Angry at himself, he scrubbed himself clean, dried off, and went to find clean clothes. He dressed in military fatigues, laced up his boots, and slid on his wristband. One emotion at a time, he bundled it up and shoved it behind a good stout door. He locked it all down. No friends, no fun, nothing. He'd wait. When the bad news came, he'd deal with it. He was in complete control of himself and his cat. His stomach demanded attention, and he slid on his aviators before heading that way. Rodney pushed away from the wall outside John's door and fell into step next to him. It didn't matter. So, my worst thing is people. I'm not human, John snapped, furious at himself. Rodney blanched. Let me finish. My worst thing is people, but I'm quite good at cats, and from all the hissing, I'm guessing you don't like Dr. Weir all that much. John wasn't answering that. He couldn't even look at him. His cat might have fallen for Rodney, but John couldn't afford to like him. Keeping his cat under control meant John had to find balance, and Rodney was like a tornado. You're mad at me? Rodney's voice was somewhere between incredulous and appalled. Guilt nipped at John, and he pushed it away. No, we're fine. Back to super soldier garb, huh? Rodney squeezed into line first, and John was happy to let him go ahead. The airman serving food smiled nervously. If you have any special dietary needs, let me know, okay? Always glad to help. This from the man who never knows if there's lemon in the food. The airman rolled his eyes. Dr. McKay, I've told you a million times, we don't get lemon up here. Just watch out for the MREs. While they were bickering, John piled on a few more things, got a water, and went to sit in his usual spot. A couple of random people nodded at him, and he returned it, but he felt like he was on a slippery slope. If he couldn't control his cougar, he had no right to be among humans. They'd pounded that into his skull at the center. Control meant life. Lose it, and they'd put you down. John never let his emotions run wild, or at least he hadn't, not until today. He shoveled his mouth full, and the realization hit him that he could get shot for even hissing at Rodney like he'd done earlier. If it was on video, or if someone wanted him dead, they had cause now. Are you going to talk to me at all? With a blink, he realized Rodney had been talking for a while. John shrugged, trying not to panic on the outside. Rodney sighed as if he'd been insulted. Dr. Weir stepped in the cafeteria, clearly looking for someone, and John took that second to fill his pockets. Rodney sputtered something, and John grabbed his tray and left, passing her with a bare nod. After dumping his trash, he went back to his quarters to mull it all over again. Climbing up on the top bunk, he put his back to the wall and finished his dinner. His mind kept circling fact after fact and coming up with nothing but bad news. His only hope was that the Air Force would refuse O'Neill and ship him somewhere. Anywhere would be better than here once Sumner arrived, but pinning his hopes on that was an act of an idiot. O'Neill was a general. The Air Force brass would nod their fool heads and stamp John's papers. The center really had no say whatsoever, not since the Air Force had taken ownership of John when he was 17. His dog tags were truly dog tags. He was owned. At the center, they told him more than once that no feline retired from the military. They'd all gotten very nice funerals, though. He hadn't cared. All he'd wanted to do was escape, fly away, and he had to admit he'd flown every copter in inventory. He'd wanted fighters, but they'd put him in helicopter training after the academy. It had been a breeze. His door chimed, and with a grunt, he went to palm it open, fully expecting Rodney to be there, demanding his time. Daniel gave him a small smile. Good news. Jack says I can read you into the program. Keeping his face expressionless, John stepped out into the hallway so the door could shut. Does this mean I've been reassigned? Not yet, no. But your security clearance has been up, so I'm sure it's just a matter of time. What Jack wants, Jack gets, and he wants you in the Stargate program. Daniel sounded happy about all that, nearly bouncing on his toes as he led the way down some hallways that John hadn't been given a tour of by Beckett. They ended up in a lab, cluttered with whiteboards that had on them a strange language that John had never seen, even worse than Arabic. He wasn't sure what to say. This was like another nail in his coffin, the one Sumner would make sure had John's name on it. Rodney tells me you've been a big help in his lab. I appreciate you helping him out. I know he can be... I like Rodney, John interrupted, not wanting to hear the rest of that sentence. He doesn't lie or smell like fear. Daniel raised his eyebrows. Oh... That's true. Well, the first part. Not sure about the second. I have allergies. He laughed. Not that it'd make a difference. What do I smell like? The odd question threw John for a second. Coffee and whiteboard marker. I make you out to be slightly nervous, but you're being very brave. Laughing, Daniel found a chair and sat down. All true. I admit, you're my first feline. I think it's the uncertainty of it. John found a stool to perch on because he had the feeling Daniel was going to lecture him. You could change at any time and kill me if you wanted, if I make you angry. Daniel shrugged. Most of our enemies are known. Betrayal is scary. Any person on this base could snap and start killing people, especially those armed Marines, half of whom have PTSD of one sort or another. John found it interesting that Daniel would actually discuss his fears. Don't you worry when they walk by? Flinch when they move too quickly? Good point. Daniel seemed to mull that over. Before I met your cat, I saw you as more of a jaguar. He went into the SEALs, or so I heard. John figured that crazy jaguar was dead by now. I wanted to fly, not swim. Do you think your cat was chosen by your wants, or did it make you choose its wants? Furrowing his brow, John thought about it. I think that as much as the center likes to teach us that man and cat are separate, my desires and wants are mine. I'm John Shepherd, whether I'm in human or feline form. So your cat doesn't make demands on you? Daniel pulled some papers and a laptop closer. Come sit with me. We may be here a while. Unsure, John stayed where he was. My cat lets me know when I'm not meeting his needs. So he speaks to you? Daniel had a pencil and was making notes. John wasn't sure he wanted to spend any more time discussing this. These last few days had made him rethink a couple of things about his cat. It's complicated. You don't want to tell me. But Daniel smiled, not looking up and rummaging through papers. It's not that easy. When I'm in fur, John hesitated, not able to articulate it. Priorities are different. Daniel nodded like he understood. And when you're in your skin, everything shifts again. It's a wonder any feline is sane. Some aren't, John said dryly. I found at an early age that if I spend time every day in my fur, my life is much easier. I'm sure some felines repress their cat until it runs wild. Daniel tilted his head. They should really write some books about this. It's fascinating. Not really. John's butt started to fall asleep, so he eased over to a chair and sat down. He still couldn't believe he'd experienced a stress switch. I'm not sure about all this. Now Daniel looked right at him. This is in being here, or is this is in your cat sometimes? I'm sort of used to the last part. John was tempted to roll his eyes. I had my first switch at a very young age. The being here part, then. Daniel opened the laptop and started searching for something. How young? 6. John had been lucky that day. No one had seen him fall from the big oak tree, switching in midair to land easily on 4 paws. He'd kept his secret for 7 years until circumstances had forced his hand. He forced himself not to rehash it again, getting back to the subject at hand. Daniel, I'm not sure that this post is the place for me. I like flying helicopters. Daniel frowned, double-clicking before looking at him again. He spun the laptop towards him. I respect that, but I'm pretty sure Rodney would hunt you to the ends of the earth if you tried to leave. I never should have licked him, John muttered. He tugged the laptop closer. It's too late to get away, isn't it? Pretty much, Daniel nodded, adjusting his glasses. But I will tell you this. This program is bigger than you realize, and Jack isn't going to make you do anything you don't want to do. John snorted in disbelief. Right, the general. A general in the Air Force, of which I'm part of. He skimmed his finger along the edge of the laptop, postponing his doom for another minute or two. I guess if Rodney knows this stuff, it can't be too scary. He's braver than people realize. Daniel got up and poured himself a coffee. You want? Is it awful like Dr. Beckett's? John wasn't falling for that trick again. Yeah. Daniel drank some anyway. I have a cooler full of water over there. He pointed at a corner, and John went for one of those. Another delay, but John wasn't in any rush. His doom, in the form of Colonel Sumner, was bearing down on him. His cat made his skin itch, wanting him to pace, so he indulged while he drank his water, ignoring Daniel's quizzical stare. Daniel cleared his throat. You look very feline doing that. It calms us both down. John wasn't sure why he was willing to tell a few truths to Daniel. The guy had a way about him that was very non-threatening. Daniel started studying some papers, and John stopped pacing to stare at the gibberish on the whiteboard. Why 7 symbols? What? Daniel glanced up, brow furrowing. He stared. Oh, well, you need to do your homework. He nudged the laptop. But why 7, not 5 or 8? John was more curious about the program now than was safe for his cougar hide. Does the mechanism only accept 7 symbols? Well, Daniel stopped, tilting his head. I don't know. John let his desire for knowledge win over his instinct to run away. It was probably another mistake. He sat down, took a breath, and started reading. There were videos, too, and he watched them with wide eyes, breath coming fast once or twice. His estimation of General O'Neill's abilities went up a notch. Those Jaffa look tough, John mumbled, wondering if he could take one down. He might get his chance if he were unlucky, and he usually was. Spaceships, wow. He couldn't help it. This was like his greatest childhood fantasies all come to life, even including the flamboyant bad guys. They'd never let me fly one of those. Never know. You have the gene. Daniel smiled at him. That gene can open doors for you. It opens other stuff, too. John went back to reading, going back over some of the super cool stuff. He felt like purring, but he shoved that down. Can I be on a gate team someday? I don't know. Daniel shrugged, but his scent said he was lying, which was disappointing. Do you think you'd stress change if he went through the gate? That was a good question, and John had no idea. Does it hurt? Not since Sam fixed it. Daniel grinned. My idea, by the way. Hours later, John's neck had a crick, and yet he still sat there, reading and making mental notes of questions he'd want to ask someone. Daniel got up and left once, but John wasn't finished. He didn't think he'd ever be finished. The math alone made him giddy, and spaceships, honest to God, spaceships with transporters and everything. It was all so cool. Someone slid a tray of food at him, and he blinked, focusing on Rodney. John couldn't help but smile. Rodney, this SGC thing has got to be the coolest thing ever. The Stargate, or the ships, or the food? Rodney grinned back at him. Yeah, John breathed, still stunned beyond belief. He chewed a biscuit, and his cat twitched at him. He needed some fur time, but it could wait another minute. How did the ships achieve warp? God, you're a nerd. It's a hyperdrive system. Same thing. John scrolled on to reread another section. Shield technology? I bet the math has to be perfect. Wait, what? Rodney peered at the laptop. Oh, ship specs. Think they'll let you fly a 302? No, I might stress switch. John would never brag about never again. Cougars don't belong in fighters. They belong in helicopters? Rodney blinked at him. Not as cramped, not as hard to fly, and they don't achieve the speeds. John lifted off the reasons by rote. I was lucky they let me in an Osprey. Lucky, yeah. Rodney stole a carrot off John's tray and munched it. Maybe they'd let me poke around on the Prometheus. The Daedalus will be done soon. Rodney tapped the laptop. You can keep this one. It's a lot to absorb in one sitting. You have access to mission reports also, if you can stomach reading them. John would do that. He shifted his attention to the food and finished in record time. No MREs? Rodney pulled one out of his coat pocket. Tuna. Give. But John glared at him while taking it. Once, there was this captain who thought it'd be funny to dump tuna MREs in my locker. Did you swat him? Rodney fished in his other pocket and opened a power bar to munch. Use him as a squeaky toy? I emptied my anal glands in his locker. John laughed when Rodney started choking. Rodney stole a drink of water and coughed. John dug into the MRE. It wasn't a favorite, but it was protein. I have to go back to my quarters soon. Remind me to never to piss you off, Rodney gasped. And why? I got stuff to do. John needed to pace, think all this over from his other perspective. Thanks for the food. Nodding, Rodney got to his feet. I'd appreciate some time in my lab, if you want. He ducked his head, not looking John in the eye. Not that I care or need the help. John wasn't sure what to say. He shut the laptop and grabbed his tray to take back to the cafeteria. I'll consider it. It was the most he could commit to right now. Thanks again. Frowning, Rodney left without another word. John felt like a heel, but forming a friendship with Rodney wasn't possible. It was a ridiculous idea even to think it. John couldn't afford it. He couldn't take the risk that it would erode his ability to control his cat. He had to be perfect. Colonel Sumner was coming, and he'd never seen a feline that he didn't want dead. Back and forth, and John would give anything for another snowball fight. His cat was restless, disgusted with sitting around, doing nothing but reading. John hadn't seen Rodney the entire time, and it wasn't a surprise. Most people stayed away after he rebuffed them. John's skin had itched for most of the day and night before he finally gave in to his fur. Around and around the room, and finally, out of desperation, he ventured to the door. It opened with a snick, and he peeked out. Nobody. He wasn't scared. If anything, the people of this base should be scared. Hey, Major Shepard, looking good. Fur is so in this year. The two ladies giggled, not even breaking stride, and he suspected they were scientists from the smell. Part of him wanted to go hide under the lower bunk. The other 60% wanted to prowl down to the cafeteria and demand food. He huffed and hesitated. Did he want this, or did his cat? John eased out into the hallway and sat down again, watching the door close. Did it matter? He wanted to wander around, maybe run on the treadmill, and definitely swat at Rodney's legs. John remembered what he'd said to Daniel. The center had told him for years that he and his cat were separate beings, sharing consciousness between changes where one was in ascendancy. It was John's job to always stay on top, always be in charge of his cat. When he was a kid, it had been so easy. He'd been Johnny Shepard, pretending to fight evil with his superpower cat abilities. There had been no separation, just John. With a cat grumble and a sweep of his tail, John set off for the cafeteria in search of something to crunch. If they shot him, they shot him. He was sure that by now Sumner had heard that there was a feline on base. Sumner might shoot him on sight, so John might as well enjoy himself today. The buzz in the cafeteria dimmed as John paced the length of the selections. Wishing for steak didn't make it appear. He chirped at the airman, stopping in front of the stew. Where there was stew, there might be bones. Theremin stared and then flushed. I did save something for you. John put one paw on the table. Be right back. Putting his paw down, John hoped it wasn't tuna, or he might have to swat it across the room. He waited, and no one pushed in front of him. Here you go. The airman handed him what had to be a cow bone. I cut the meat for the stew off of it. Rearing up, John took it with his mouth, making a note to thank the airman later. He wanted to jump for joy, but everyone was looking. Head high, he paced out of the cafeteria and did a quick reconnaissance. He didn't want to go back to his room, so he trotted down to Rodney's lab. Rodney didn't even turn around as John slunk in the door and hid under a lab table that was pushed into a corner. The bone was cold, allaying John's fears about bacteria, but he wouldn't have cared anyway. He'd always been able to digest anything. Delicious. Amazing. He licked his lips and gloated over it. Really? That's disgusting. Rodney's face was upside down, glaring at him. Go find somewhere else to moan over your bone. John gnawed, ignoring him. It was safe here, and he was tired of being alone. Rodney kept on complaining, interspersed with a running monologue about why John was a crappy friend and everyone on his space was a moron. How long are you going to snack on that? Rodney was upside down again. And why did you drag it in here? I thought you were avoiding me. The bone snapped, and John started licking out the marrow. He switched the bone from his left to his right paw to get a better grip. Rodney disappeared, still talking. In my spare time, I've done some research. That Center for Feline Control is a joke. It's just a warehouse until felines can be sold to the highest bidder. Everyone knew that, or at least everyone who was feline. John spotted a part that hadn't been chewed enough and started on it. I just assumed it was like Canada. Rodney sounded sad now. We don't round up our felines and sell them. There was no way to answer that. Some countries were better than the U.S., some were worse. Woe to the feline who was born in China. They were always shot, skinned, and their organs and bones were ground up and made into potions, cures, and aphrodisiacs. On the open market, it sold for hundreds of thousands an ounce. There were rumors that felines desperately tried to get to Mongolia, but no one knew how few made it. And did you know the Air Force owns you? You have no free will, no choices. Even your dog tag is custom-made. Did you know that if they catch you without your tag, you can be shot? Rodney's voice kept going up. They'd explained that to John at boot camp. He hadn't cared. You can be shot for all kinds of things, Rodney said in a calmer voice. Shot! Then he went off again in a tirade about imbeciles and rules and how John should head for Canada and seek asylum. John didn't have the heart to switch and explain to him that there was a treaty and that the Canadians would just ship him home to be shot for running away. There was a glug-glugging noise, and then Rodney slid a bowl of water under the table. I'm a genius, you know, and all that got me thinking. You're not waiting here to make a decision. You're stuck here until they decide your next posting, and then that led me back to Dr. Weir and all the hissing. All of a sudden, Rodney crawled right under the table with him. His face was dead serious as he fought for a second to sit cross-legged, hunching over. John put his bones slightly away and took a drink of water, waiting for it. The video cameras can't see us under here, and there's no audio, but Rodney still spoke barely above a whisper. I might, possibly, have hacked a few files. Colonel Sumner has had 5 felines under his command die. 5. John put his chin on Rodney's knee. You knew. God, you knew. Rodney put his hand on John's head. That's why you freaked out. You're waiting in that tiny room until O'Neill puts you under Sumner's command, at Dr. Weir's request. Hell, I even requested it. Sumner is going to kill you. Oh, it'll look like an accident, or you'll die heroically, but you'll still be very dead. There was no way to answer that, not in human or feline form. John raised his head and stared into Rodney's eyes. And you've accepted it. Rodney put his face in his hands. When he looked up, his eyes were fierce. I am not going to allow that to happen. I don't know how, but I'm a genius. I'll think of something. Pulling his bone close, John went back to chewing. Air Force personnel went on missions with little or no guarantee of success all the time. He's flown his copters into hell holes to extract casualties, and he'd do it again. No, he didn't want to die, and he'd fight to the bitter end. But if it came, well, he'd had a good run. The average lifespan of a feline was 30, and he'd beaten the odds for years. So, maybe you're a crap friend, but I understand why now. Rodney nearly hit his head on the edge of the table, crab walking out from underneath. Maybe I'm a crap friend, too, for demanding you go on a mission with a commander who wants you dead. John abandoned his bone, plodding out. He sat down in front of him and raised his paw. I'm not touching that until you've showered. Twice. Tackling him was dead easy. John sat on Rodney, who yowled, and then he purred. A little. Not much. He was still going to die, but at least someone understood. I tell you, sooner or later, Shepard's going to eat him. I'm not reporting it if he does. John waved a paw at the security guys, and then let Rodney get to his feet. Rodney, as usual, pulled John's ears. I hate you. That was probably for the best, but John had given up on keeping his distance. They'd be friends. And his cat purred. It is not a shoeshine machine. If you're going to argue with me, I'm going to spend the afternoon chewing my bone. John wished he'd brought it with him. Next time he would. He picked up the next piece, sniffed it to irritate Rodney, and tilted his head. It jolted through him, and it clattered to the floor as he switched in a manner that could only be described for Rodney later as violently. He'd switched in his clothes before, and it was always irritating. Tangled in sleeves and boots, he looked up to see Rodney's mouth hanging open. That wasn't helping at all. The device wasn't too far away on the floor where it had fallen, and John wiggled to it, putting his paw on it. Once again, it blew through him, and he panted on the floor, making sure not to touch it again. Wow. What just happened? Rodney scooped it up and put it on the bench. Did it? Yes, it forced me to switch. John pushed to sitting, still out of breath. A hard switch. Kind of hurt. Does it usually hurt? Rodney pushed a bottle of water at him before starting to take notes. No. John scrubbed his hand through his hair. I can't imagine why... Oh, wait. He uncapped the water and took a sip. Put it in your hand, right in front of my eyes. Rodney did exactly that. Are you attempting a mind meld? John sighed. Shut up a second. He probed at it with his brain, hoping for some information, but all he got was a picture of DNA. Whose DNA, he didn't know. It's showing me DNA. Not human, I don't think. It looks weird. Pulling over a laptop, Rodney clicked and clicked, finally showing him a picture. Feline DNA? Nodding, John drank some more water. Okay. He put the bottle down. I'm going to let it switch me again. Then do the thing where you hold it close to my eyes. Are you sure? You said it hurt. Rodney fumbled for the laptop, the device, and the water. Stay down so you don't fall again. Yes, Mother. John took the device from him and had the wind knocked out of him again. He should have taken off his boots. They hurt his paws. Rodney held the device up for him, and John tried to see. It was much harder in this form, but after a minute he got it. Instead of touching it again, he switched under his own power. It was so much easier. He groaned. Human DNA. Rodney handed him the water again. John put the cool bottle against his forehead. It was made to force a switch. Say, if a feline hadn't had their first one yet or was stuck in the other form. Stuck? Rodney frowned. You can get stuck? It happens. Some people lose too much of themselves to the cat and stay that way. That, John pointed with the water, would make them change whether they liked it or not, as long as they also have the ATA gene. We don't know that that's true. John wasn't willing to guess on that. My head kind of hurts. Let's get you to Carson. Rodney put the device in the laptop far away. He came back to help John to his feet. John swayed a little, feeling dizzy. He was going to say no, push Rodney away, but his knees were weak. Rodney put John's arm over his shoulders and got him moving. John thought he mumbled something about being able to walk on his own, and then he passed out. Rodney, settle down. The Major is fine, just sleeping. He totally passed out, and he's heavy. He looks skinny, but wow, he's incredibly dense. Rodney wasn't whispering. Not in a stupid way, Carson, in a thick way. John cracked open his eyes. Hey, I'm sleeping here. Go away. John, don't ever do that again. Rodney awkwardly patted him on the shoulder. The passing out thing, I mean. Okay, I won't. John brought his hands up to rub his face and noticed he was trailing an IV. Beckett? You are dehydrated. Too many changes, I imagine. Beckett took John's pulse. You're staying put. Go back to sleep. Not with Rodney talking. John caught Rodney by the arm before he could get away. Tell him about the thing. I did. I'm going to try to get Daniel to do some research on it. Rodney didn't yank his arm away. What if it can transform anyone with the gene? We need more information. John's head swam with the possibilities. Be careful. It hurts. Noted. Carson frowned at them both. No more taking risks like that. Rodney might have nodded. John shut his eyes all the way and fell asleep before Carson could fuss at them anymore. Before you leave, I want you to change, just to make sure everything is working properly, Beckett said. I promise no one will faint this time. John wasn't sure he believed that. Okay, but someone will need to carry my stuff to my quarters. I'm not switching right back. Grand idea. Beckett pulled the curtain around John. Get to it, lad. Stomach grumbling for food, John tugged off the scrubs and switched. He hopped off the gurney, ducking under the curtain. Beckett smiled. Everything in the right place? Making a show of checking his balls, John whistled when Beckett laughed. John was surprised when Beckett himself carried John's clothes and boots. The instant they were on his bunk, he turned back to the door. He was starved. Beckett followed after him. Where now? Cougars do not play charades, John thought, and he got in line at the cafeteria. Beckett was still behind him. Oh, you're hungry. I'll get you a tray. Putting his paw in front of the items he wanted, John watched Beckett pile it on. John wasn't in the mood to eat like a civilized cat. He grabbed a water bottle with his mouth and went back towards his quarters. Beckett followed, balancing it all easily enough. John opened the door and sat down, wishing he could rip the tray out of Beckett's hand. Not a lot of furniture in here. Beckett sat the tray on the floor. He went to the bunks and perched on the lower one. It wouldn't kill him to get you a chair. I suppose you'd never ask for one. Crouching down, John ate. He almost ate plastic from his greediness. I'm a right idiot. You have special dietary needs, being a large carnivore and all. I should have made arrangements. Beckett sighed. We know so little about felines, and the center doesn't share its information. Have you heard when you'll be going to Colorado? John shook his head at him and went back to lick the tray clean. Stomach full enough, John strolled over to Beckett and sat down close enough to lean against him. Beckett didn't know that he was being given a rare treat. Beckett stroked his hand down John's head and neck. Your fur feels healthy. If you do suffer from anything, tell me. I can get a veterinarian here. I'll have to stomp my feet, but that's no trouble. It was nice of him to say, and John put his head on Beckett's knee to thank him. Beckett laughed and rubbed him. I can see why Rodney is so enamored with you. He misses his cat dreadfully. So Rodney had a cat. Don wasn't surprised. He rubbed his chin on Beckett's thigh, marking him as John's doctor. Not that Beckett needed to know that. You gave Rodney a fright. Beckett continued to stroke him. Be careful with the ancient technology. It can be dangerous, as you know, since I nearly blew you out of the sky with it. Eyes drooping, John pushed away and leaped on the top bunk. He thumped to his back and put his paws in the air. Clear enough. Rest, John. Carson picked up the tray and crept away. John locked the door with his mind and dimmed the lights. The ancient gene made being lazy easy. For the next week, John did exactly what he wanted with his fur for the first time in his life. He knew it was ridiculous, but since Sumner was going to kill him, he might as well live it up. No sneaking around, no hiding in the bathroom, no pacing for hours in a tight circle behind a locked door. He played in the sun, ran on the treadmill, and ate all the food he wanted, once or twice even when he was full. Rodney monopolized hours of John's time, and John lost all concept of day and night, but he would never complain. When he wanted to be in his fur, he was, and when he felt like being human, he did that too. No one harassed him or teased him, and he wondered if the moron who'd left the bowl of milk had been told to knock it off. Rodney was protective of John when he was in his fur. It was hilarious, but John liked it. That was a first, too. The first time, it might have been day, that John noticed Rodney was flagging from exhaustion, John simply circled and pushed until Rodney, yelling about how he was fine and thanks, but no, he was not going anywhere, gave up and went back to his quarters. You better be awake when I'm ready to go back, you lazy bag of fur. Rodney marched in his room, headed for the shower from the last peek that John got before the door closed. John eyed his door, not far away, and considered a shower of his own. He could still hear movement inside Rodney's quarters, and suspicious, John lay down in the doorway. Putting his head on his paws, he shut his eyes, relaxing. He was half asleep when the door opened, and Rodney practically fell on top of him. Growling and grumbling, John herded his Rodney to the bed and pointed with a paw. Damn it, who knew you were a guard dog, too? Rodney towed off his shoes and rolled on the bed. It was full size, much bigger than either of John's bunks. There was also actual furniture in Rodney's room. It looked as if he'd lived in it for some time. John yawned, suddenly tired himself, and turned to go when Rodney got back up. John let him have a real growl this time. Rodney stared at him for a long moment and then started stripping. If John had been in his skin, he would have blushed, but instead, he covered his eyes with a paw. Rodney laughed and dived back into bed in only his boxers, green, and a t-shirt, faded white. Heart beating a touch faster, paws dragging, John took two steps toward the door. Shower and bed sounded good. Fine, really it did.
You could stay, Rodney whispered, voice full of hurt and rejection that John never would have heard if he'd been wearing his skin.
John froze, one paw in the air, not sure that he wanted what he'd been hoping for. He might sleep switch. It happened occasionally. Either way, skin or fur. Now Rodney sounded scared, exactly the way John felt. Muscles trembling, tail tucked, John crept back to the bed, unsure of everything except that he didn't want to be alone any longer. Rodney already had his eyes closed, which made it easier for John to crawl inside the circle of Rodney's arms. With a long sigh, Rodney curled around John, pulling them together. John felt like maybe he should grumble or chirp or something, but Rodney snored into John's neck before that happened. All of John relaxed at once, and he wrapped his tail back and around Rodney's leg. Sleeping was good. They could do that. Waking up hours later, John's tiny bit of courage failed him, and he snuck to his room. He switched before he got to the shower, and he had hold of his cock before the water hit his body. A sexually aroused cougar wasn't something to fool around with, and humping Rodney's leg or back would have been beyond embarrassing, maybe even dangerous. John did it quick and nasty, thinking of very little besides Rodney's mouth on him, somewhere, anywhere. When his head cleared, he realized that Rodney might well kill him for sneaking out. Fast, John washed, dried, and threw on some clothes. He beat it down to the cafeteria, got as much food and coffee as he could carry, and opened Rodney's door with a thought. Rodney was asleep, but he muttered something the instant John sat the food down on a handy table. John almost wished he had one. With a smile, John took the coffee and went to the bed. Rodney blinked up at him, blurry-eyed. "I accept your offering," Rodney said, taking the cup, but it was still crappy to sneak out. Lowering his head in apology, John had a feeling he'd better say the right thing. "I needed to switch, and, well, no one likes to see that." That was mostly true. "Sorry." He was man enough to say it. "I've seen you change." Rodney took a long sip, slurping to cool it. "Sort of gross, sort of cool. It's very mutant meets X-Men meets..." "Lion King?" John interrupted. He wasn't sure whether to be complimented or angry, and that happened pretty often when Rodney talked. "You like Wolverine, I guess." "He's the best in that universe." Rodney leaned back against the wall, cradling his coffee. "Can I call you Simba?" "Only if you feel like getting bit in the ass." John left him in the bed, going to sit at the table and eat. If he stayed near the bed, he was going to reach out and touch Rodney somewhere that might not be welcome. The scrambled eggs had actual pieces of sausage in them, and he concentrated on that. "Are you leaving me some?" Rodney asked, looking offended. "I'm surprised there's any food left on base after last night's dinner." "Beckett ordered it special for me." John was still gloating over the bones in the freezer with his name on them. "Are you getting up sometime today?" Rodney blushed, and John had a good idea what the problem was. Right now was the time to make his move, but his feet seemed glued to the floor. His cat itched at him, and John knew now was his own urge to be stroked, petted, even caressed. "It's easier when I'm in fur, isn't it?" John stopped eating long enough to ask. "You miss your cat." He needed to make this less, so it didn't hurt so much when it wasn't more. "Newton is a great cat. You are not a cat." Rodney staggered a little, getting to the table. "You eat like a pig, ergo, not a cat." He started eating directly from the tray, not even bothering with a fork. "I think you're some sort of pig-man-furball hybrid, genetically designed in an ancient laboratory with the distinct purpose of driving me insane." "That's cruel, even a tad harsh." John couldn't stop from laughing, knowing that other people cried from Rodney's insults, and that being called a pig should bother him. "You're just worried there won't be any food left for you." "Who can blame me?" Rodney ate a little faster, and they finished off every scrap while glaring, even if John was laughing on the inside. John ate the last bite insolently, licking his lips, and then Rodney threw a fork at him, and it was on. When the carnage settled, breathless with laughing, John bore Rodney to the floor and covered him with his skin instead of fur this time. Rodney still yowled and wiggled. John curled to the side, draping an arm and leg across him. It felt good. "You oaf," Rodney said, but he was holding on tightly. "The floor is cold." John wanted to kiss him, hold him, stay in bed all day with him. Rodney moved, pushing, and John let him go. "Thanks, Rodney." Rodney staggered to his feet, nodding as if he knew what John was talking about. "I am a genius. I'm going to shower." Making sure he didn't stare at Rodney's erection, clearly visible in old boxers, John sat up and wrapped his arms around his knees.
He could want this, but he couldn't have it. The teachers at the center hadn't recommended any of them have sex. Powerful emotions led to stress switching. "Is it because I'm feline?" John asked, pitching his voice low. He hated that he needed to know the truth of why Rodney was walking away. Hesitating at the door of the bathroom, Rodney looked at his feet. "Sometimes it's not about you." And he ducked inside, gone in a flash of boxers. John didn't know what to think. True, it wasn't always about him, but it usually was. Sighing, he got to his feet and went to his room. He'd stay in his fur today to avoid blushing and asking stupid questions. "Hey, Puss in Boots, can we go inside now? I'm freezing." John yawned from his perch on top of the snowplow. A snowball flew by, but Rodney generally had crappy aim. Rodney stamped his feet. "Damn it, John, my ass is frozen." Ears perking, John rose to his paws and listened. He'd recognize that sound anywhere, and it was coming closer. He wavered between panic that Sumner was on board and hope that the cafeteria had sent for more bones. Then it hit him that it was his copter, and he jumped down like his tail was on fire. Rodney started yelling, but John left him far behind in his dash to get to the helicopter landing pad, or what passed for one, in the snow. He got there right as it touched down. She was still beautiful, and he tried to look dignified as he paced over and rubbed his chin on a strut. "Guess you're glad to see me," O'Neill drawled, leaving his door open as he got his feet on the snowy ground. The rotor blade slowed way down, and John reared up to drape over the passenger seat, giving the pilot a glare before making sure nothing had been damaged. "He's taking good care of your copter," O'Neill said. "I made sure of it." Barely satisfied, John chuffed and snorted. He would give anything to go for a flight. The pilot saluted him with a grin, and John got out to properly greet O'Neill. O'Neill started for the elevator, and John caught up with him easily. They met Rodney halfway there, and Rodney had a lot to say. O'Neill grunted his answers and then ditched the airman who ran the elevator. "It'll be crowded." O'Neill held the door until John's tail was safely inside. "McKay, shut up a minute. Major, how are you settling in?" John whistled, tucking his tail tightly around his hindquarters, out of range of feet and doors. O'Neill suddenly surprised him by going to one knee, and they were more or less at eye level. John held perfectly still as O'Neill reached and then cradled the dog tag that dangled against John's chest. "Daniel read you into the program?" A nod was good enough. O'Neill let go of the dog tag. "Daniel has been filling my ears. He's right, of course. We're no better than the go-old when it comes to how we treat felines." That seemed a bit extreme, but not by much. John chirped, and the elevator ground to a halt. Rodney got the door, and O'Neill stood. "My knees ain't what they used to be," O'Neill grumbled. "Okay, McKay, you can start whining again. Major, why don't you go help unload the shipment of supplies I brought? In a supervisory capacity, of course. You're an officer." John would do that. He swatted Rodney's leg with a paw, wanting to know where Rodney would be. "I'll need McKay with me." Good enough, and John knew when he was being ditched so his fate could be determined by the ranking officers. He swiped his chin on Rodney's dangling hand and got back in the elevator. The good news was that Colonel Sumner wasn't here yet. The bad news was that O'Neill had John's orders with him, and those orders would most likely get him killed. Rodney glanced back once, looking worried, and John hit the button to go up with his paw. Once the supplies were away, he'd switch and take a shower. He'd rather hear about his new assignment and all the death that came with it as a human. That way he wouldn't yowl as much. Up top, the airman looked glad to have his elevator, and John hurried back to his helicopter. There were several people taking cargo off, and John jumped right inside to supervise correctly. "Hey, Major, I think there's a whole carcass in here." John tried not to drool on the seat. He could sit around and worry, or he could make sure he had meat for dinner. The meat won out, and he put it down to the fact he was wearing his fur. He took the job seriously, making sure the paperwork was done and everything was put away. The Marines handling the job didn't laugh at him. They worked, once or twice groaning when he used a paw to correct something. He was damn careful not to scratch anyone or anything. The airman in charge of the kitchen looked happy. "Best shipment ever, real food for a change." That was good news for everyone. John snatched a bottle of water and headed to his quarters. Later, he might sneak out to make sure his helicopter was still there. He hadn't heard it leave, but he was far underground. Switching before he hit the shower, he guzzled the water, glad he'd eaten in his fur so he wasn't hungry now. He dressed in his cleanest uniform, even putting on his watch and wristband. For a long moment, he sat on the bottom bunk, head braced into his hands, telling himself over and over again that no matter what happened,
He would not stress switch. The door opened, and O'Neill stepped inside without a please or thank you. He took it all in with one glance. You could use some furniture. Are they afraid you'll chew it up? John was already in parade rest by the end of the first sentence. That's all there was when Rodney said I could bunk here. That's why I wanted Daniel to find you a room. He knows how important couches and stuff are to a guy. O'Neill rolled his eyes. Everyone is talking at me about you. Yes, sir. John was used to that. It hit me that no one has talked much to you. O'Neill leaned against the wall, almost slouching. Dr. Weir assumes you're going with her to Atlantis if they find it. When Daniel finds it. John made sure not to flinch or wince or even look interested. She said she was waiting until you returned before talking to me about the mission. You see, I don't get that. Why not give you all the details? Ask you if you want to go. She knows I don't have free will. John shrugged. Of course, no one in the Air Force does. You have less than most, but no one is being assigned to this mission. It might be one way. Volunteers only. O'Neill shook his head. You can't volunteer. No, sir. John was willing to stand here all day and talk in circles, but he wasn't going to change anything. Truth is, I've exceeded my lifespan, pissed off some brass, and McMurdo was supposed to be a punishment. You turned it into some sort of vacation for me, he smiled. And thanks. O'Neill laughed. It's true they have no idea what to do with you any longer, and in that light, they've washed their hands of you and given you to the SGC. He reached in his pocket and tossed over a shiny bit of metal on a chain. Welcome to the club. John caught it easily. He didn't read it. He put it on before taking off the old one. That one he slipped into his pocket. Thank you, sir. He couldn't put much heart into it. I like enthusiasm, O'Neill said with remarkable sarcasm. Buck up, you might get to fly a spaceship someday. It was difficult, but John said nothing, swallowing down his sarcasm in disbelief. On the one hand, he was glad to be under O'Neill's command. On the other, he figured this was his last stop. No going any further, no retirement to the center, and he would make sure to update his will soon so they'd know what to do with his body. Yeah, I wouldn't believe me either. O'Neill pushed away from the wall. Let's walk and talk, Major. With a thought, John opened the door and fell into step beside him. The ancient technology is very cool. Usually, yes. O'Neill didn't rush through the halls. McKay says you've initialized a device that could help stuck felines or something like that. Maybe. John wasn't a scientist, but he thought it needed more study. It brings up the idea that there have been felines on this earth since the ancients were here. Daniel has been turning backflips over it. It opens up whole new ideas about why some people are felines. Did you ask the Center for the DNA results they keep on each and every one of us? Frankly, John thought felines would be better off in this program than others. O'Neill stopped walking, turning enough to eye him. They have those? For every feline who's ever graced their doors. John had kept his ears open when he was being experimented on as a teenager. They weren't surprised when I showed up. Apparently one of my uncles was a feline. He's... O'Neill looked uncomfortable asking. Dead. John hadn't known him. He was a lion in his fur. They told me he died a hero in Vietnam. O'Neill stuck his hands in his pockets. You sound skeptical. They lie. John shrugged. There wasn't anything he could do about it now. I want those records. John turned to him, narrowing his eyes. The center doesn't cooperate with the military. They always seemed happy to sell us to you. John couldn't even flash a bitter grin. He thought about it, coming up with a few more ideas. Other than a midnight raid, I'd suggest sending Dr. Beckett in, wanting more of my records so you can dissect me properly. Then, while he's there, have Rodney steal everything with his laptop. Pointing at John's chest, O'Neill tilted his head. I like the way you think. He paused, without the dissecting part. Thanks. John pushed his own agenda. Do I get to fly them there? That would be irony, and I love irony. O'Neill nodded, moving again. We'll do it. We're 4 months out from Atlantis. It's going to be tight. Assuming Daniel finds the address. John wanted to see a Stargate in action. Reading about and watching videos had to pale in comparison. He will, trust me. O'Neill opened a door and ushered John inside. Right now, we need to talk. John had thought they were doing that, but he took a seat in front of a smallish desk covered with papers. O'Neill sat down, shoveled things around, and opened a few drawers, peering inside as if it weren't his desk. Colonel Sumner has been placed in command of the Atlantis mission. Dr. Weir informed us of that, sir. John kept his tone even and refused to bounce his knee. He was fine. He was breathing. I vetted you through him naturally because Dr. Weir wants you on the mission. O'Neill fiddled with a few things, not looking up. I was thinking I could get you to volunteer if I promised you a spaceship or two.
That would have worked. John told himself it was the truth. He eased out of breath, glad he'd been in his fur for hours already today.
Colonel Sumner refuses to have you. O'Neill met John's eyes head on now, and I won't share his reasons why. Disappointment chased a quick rush of relief. John rubbed his hands down his legs and flexed his hands, not sure what to think. He'd been dreading this assignment so much he'd never considered that Sumner would turn him down.
McKay went ballistic. I practically had to have him restrained in the meeting.
O'Neill didn't look away. I'm not sure he's ever had a friend, so I cut him some slack for some of the verbiage he used.
Dr. Weir is unhappy as well. This situation is being discussed.
O'Neill sighed and shrugged. The IOA wants Sumner as base commander. You did read about the IOA.
Yes, sir. John leaned back marginally, no longer feeling quite so much like throwing up. I have to admit, I'm surprised you wanted me at the SGC at all after Colonel Sumner refused me.
You have the gene, and Daniel tells me you're a nice guy.
O'Neill smiled. We'll take the changing device to the center, see if you can help any felines who are stuck.
And if there are more felines with the ATA gene?
John thought he knew the answer, but he had to ask.
We'll bring them back.
O'Neill sounded sure about that.
And if the center puts up a fight?
John thought they might. They were highly secretive bastards who loved their positions as overlords of the feline population.
I'll have the president explain things to them.
O'Neill nodded at John's wide eyes.
Yes, I can do that. He's not happy about this situation either.
So much for flying under the radar. Even the president was irritated with John.
You're going to be spending a lot of time in that helicopter of yours in the next month. Are you up to it? Feeling fit?
O'Neill waved his hand in John's general direction.
Your cat likes to fly?
I never wanted anything else.
John smiled, honest now. I'm in top form. My teeth are sharp and everything.
O'Neill leaned back and laughed.
Good. For now, you're on my staff as my aide and personal pilot.
John felt like he'd been hit in the chest. He clicked his teeth shut. He managed a ragged breath.
Yes, sir.
He breathed.
Don't get excited. It doesn't come with a promotion, and from what I understand, the Air Force doesn't even pay you.
No, sir.
John was owned, not employed, and he honestly wasn't sure if it was excitement at an assignment that many pilots would fight over. It was more like a bare hope that Sumner might not get his hands on John's fur after all.
But I was promised a very nice headstone.
Rubbing his eyes, O'Neill laughed like it was painful.
Take that other pilot back to McMurdo, get my helicopter ship shape, and laze about here for 3 days. Then we're gone.
Yes, sir. John got to his feet, and he couldn't help but bounce a little at the thought of flying. He thought he was in this igloo to stay.
Should I run away if I see Rodney?
As fast as your paws can carry you, O'Neill grinned, but he'll still catch you.
He's pretty quick for a human. John nodded at the waved hand and managed to leave without kicking up his heels.
He was back in the air for now, and that was good enough. He would deal with the rest of it as it came at him.
Back to his room, he switched into his flight suit and got his coat. He made sure he had his aviators and tried not to bound out the door.
Rodney leaned against the nearest wall, and his face was somewhere between furious and crumpled, as if he was beyond upset.
John stopped cold.
You're happy you're not going. Rodney's voice sounded raw. Of course you're happy. You like living. How could I be so stupid?
He started wandering off towards his lab, and John followed, feeling helpless.
Rodney kept on talking.
I don't blame you. I'd make the same choice, but the work we could have done, the things we could discover, all lost because some stupid colonel is a dog person. I swear, some days I want to nuke the planet.
He took a ragged breath.
Are you following me? Stop that. Go do other things.
Confused, John did stop.
Rodney was out of sight quickly, and John tried to wrap his brain around it. He thought Rodney would chase after him, demand all sorts of things, up to and including that John stow away on the mission. Instead, Rodney had taken one look at John's somewhat happy face and been crushed.
Everyone said Rodney was terrible with people, but John was even worse.
Hell, John wasn't even human, and he figured that's why he sucked at it. Still, he should be able to understand. They were friends, and that hadn't been easy for John to accept at all. Wouldn't Rodney still want to be friends, even if John couldn't go to Atlantis?
Checking the time, John hurried after him, catching him right at the doorway to his lab. John grabbed him by the arm, pulling him to a stop.
You find out that I can't be your personal feline tech slave on Atlantis and you blow me off? I'm no longer good enough for you? Is that what this is? Rodney's mouth clicked shut. He yanked his arm away. I thought maybe you wanted us to work together. John was starting to understand. And if I can't, you don't want anything to do with me? I get it now. We're not friends. You're just another human using me. He turned away fast before Rodney could lie and jog to the elevator. It didn't matter. John had work to do, and he put on his aviators before the elevator made it to the top. It made sense now why Rodney hadn't responded to John's overtures, picking a shower instead. Rodney was smart enough not to get too attached. John ran his hand through his hair, shaking it off. This is what he knew. Humans used him. It was his fault for being dumb enough to think that Rodney was different. After all these years, John would have thought he was smarter than that. No snowballs today, Major? No, I get to take the copter out. John forced a grin like he was fine, and he was. Flying was what he loved, not turning on ancient tech, and certainly not hanging out in Rodney's lab. It was good he finally understood the rules, before he'd done something ridiculous like kiss Rodney. It was just as John had been taught over and over again. He could want, but he couldn't have, and he sure as hell wasn't surprised. There was a feeling that all was right with the world when his copter was secured properly, outfitted with all the necessary supplies and fuel, and buffed to a deep shine. John thanked his crew, good guys, and decided it was past time to hit the cafeteria. He ate alone at his usual table, and he wasn't keeping an eye on the door for Rodney. After he dumped his trash, he wandered over to his favorite airman. Give me some bones to go, will ya? Sure. How many? John shrugged. More than a few. He needed to crunch his frustration out. The airman nodded, going back to the freezer, and John had his bones a few minutes later. He hefted the bag, grinned his thanks, and started for his room. He wanted some time in his fur, nothing else. Unfortunately, Dr. Weir got to him before he reached his door. Major, we need to talk, she said with a brittle smile. I have no say in my deployments, assignments, or postings. John covered all the bases, hoping to forestall her. I'm assigned to the SGC now. They will put me wherever they want. Her eyes narrowed. You refuse to even speak to General O'Neill about the Atlantis mission? There was a line here, and John didn't want to piss her off, but he wanted her to understand. I've spoken to him. Colonel Sumner refuses to have me on the mission. His opinion is the one that counts, and unfortunately for you, he hates felines with a passion. McCabe thinks maybe he's a dog person. Rodney is threatening to stay here. My entire mission is in jeopardy, she said with a slight tremble in her voice. That news was a shock, but he kept his face expressionless. He would think about it while he chewed his bones. Colonel Sumner and General O'Neill are the ones who can help you. I have no power, none. I go where they put me. You seem satisfied with that. Her tone was sharp now, almost an insult. Dr. Weir, I'm a feline. I can't help you. No one will listen to me. John clenched his jaw, not wanting to continue this conversation. He wanted to have choices in his life, but his gene pool made that impossible. Rodney listens to you. She edged closer. Remind him that he's wanted this mission for years. John was starting to think that he was never going to like this lady. He took a breath, ready to say something scathing, and smelled him. The general was a sneak, coming out of nowhere. John waited, raising his eyebrows at him when he appeared around a corner. That is far above his pay grade, Lizzie, O'Neill said, hands in his pockets. Let him go enjoy his lunch. We need to talk. Weir turned to O'Neill, and John beat a hasty retreat inside his room without a trace of guilt. With deliberate motions, keeping his brain from running in circles, he stripped off his clothes, folding them neatly. He switched, tail flailing, noisy growls, and pacing all coming at once. The bones smacked the wall with a thump. The pacing wore his temper out, and where he'd assumed that he was done talking to Rodney, it seemed as if they had a yelling match or two left to go. That made him slump to the floor. He didn't want to fight, argue. Even if Rodney was just another human who'd use John to further his own career, John still liked him. It was damn annoying. He snagged the bag, ripped it open, and settled down for some serious chewing. If he and O'Neill were leaving in a few days, he'd have to make sure to get all his bones for the trip. There was no telling what accommodations, if any, he'd get if he were flying O'Neill around the world. John wasn't worried. He'd slept in a lot of copters over the years. Sometimes it was safer. Tearing the bag further, John rooted out an especially meaty one. His mouth was full when the door rang, and he opened it with his mind without getting up. His heart sank, thinking it was Rodney, but Daniel stepped inside, hands in his pockets, looking everywhere but at John. Bad time?
For fun, John snapped the bone in half. Daniel flinched. Jack asked me to come see if you're all right. That's not the remains of Rodney, is it? Flicking his tail in irritation, John shook his head. You should have asked for a sofa or a chair or something. Daniel didn't seem to be in a hurry to leave, sliding down the wall to sit on the floor. They were close to eye level, but John kept on with his bone. He didn't have anything to say. Daniel cleared his throat. This is the thing. Everyone is upset. Please take what they say with a grain of salt. We've all been working on this project for years in one way or another, and tension is running high. We finally found someone with a strong ATA genetic expression who's not Jack, and Sumner throws a temper tantrum. John licked his chops, considering offering Daniel a bone just for the humor of it. Add in the hurricane that's McKay when he's pissed off, and you could see where Dr. Weir might be pushed to a bad place. Daniel leaned forward, face curious. Are those delicious in both forms? Chirping, John went ahead and rolled a bone to him. Believe it or not, I've gnawed on a few of these myself. Daniel smiled at a memory that he wasn't sharing. It was interesting that O'Neill had sent Daniel to apologize for Weir. John wasn't sure what to believe, and it really didn't matter one way or the other. It wasn't as if his wishes would be followed or even taken into account. He shrugged in a cougar way, not willing to switch to discuss it. He did wonder if Daniel got tired of making excuses for his friends, but once again, not John's business. This is sort of like talking to Teal'c. Daniel levered himself up to his feet. I'll leave you to your bones. Just think about what I said. John opened the door for him. And that's really cool. Daniel gave a weird little wave and hurried out the door. John let it shut, going back to gnawing the messy one. He would need a shower after this, but he didn't care. Flipping them, cracking them open, was satisfying. He even played a game of floor hockey with one until it went under the bunk. Stomach full, fur filthy, he rolled to his side and let his eyes shut. Rolling around and eating bones didn't hold any attraction for John the next day, and by lunch he was bored out of his mind with reading reports. Usually he was busy with Rodney, but that didn't bear thinking about, so John plucked up his courage and went to O'Neill's office. It was empty, of course. John sat across from the desk and dragged a piece of paper towards him. He'd leave a note if he could find a pen. That took some digging. Are you looking for something in particular? O'Neill drawled, slouched in the doorway. You are the sneakiest general in the Air Force. John's heart rate shot through the roof. He straightened, trying not to look guilty. I admire that about you. Thanks. O'Neill moved around him to sit down. Did you need something? I was leaving you a note that I'm bored and about ready to find someone to bite. John sat down, not worried any longer that he'd be yelled at for his usual amount of mouthiness. O'Neill nodded, finding a pen and handing it to him. Write this note for me. Okay. John was willing to play along. Dear Dr. McKay, O'Neill said, stopping for a moment and peering at the paper under John's hand. Are you getting this? Do I write that too? John smirked. Grinning, O'Neill shook his head. You're a smart ass. I don't think he's going to like this note. John acted like he was writing that. Anything else? Give me that. O'Neill gave out a heavy sigh. You're a better pilot than a secretary. You better hope so. John handed him the pen. O'Neill dashed off a fast note and handed it to John. For some reason, John read it aloud. Dear McKay, Shepard is bored. Please let him turn on gadgets so I don't have to. Thanks, General Jack O'Neill. Don't you wish you'd stayed in your room? Yes. John got to his feet, note in hand. Do I have to deliver this, sir? Toot sweet. O'Neill opened the bottom drawer, staring down into it. Daniel hid my booze again. John stepped close and leaned over to take a big sniff. Yep, I can smell him. Okay, never do that again. O'Neill glared and then broke out laughing. I like you, Shepard. Sorry about that, sir. John left before he wore out his welcome. He wasn't sure what it was about O'Neill that brought out John's natural inability to be serious about anything for too long. Maybe it was the smirking. John walked very slowly to Rodney's lab, picking up a fresh cup of coffee in the cafeteria. It might distract Rodney long enough that John could escape while still obeying his commanding officer. The lab was quiet, not even the clicking of computer keys, but Rodney was hunched over something. John sat the note down near him, putting the coffee on top. Rodney didn't look over, but he did sip the coffee and read the note. He let it drift to the floor. John edged towards the door. The silent version of Rodney was creepy. If you hadn't come along, I could have gone on living in stupid ignorance. Rodney's voice was soft and low. But no, you had to shove your big cougar nose in my face and teach me about ancient tech, how it works and when it works, and now I know that if we go to Atlantis without someone like you, we might as well not. Nothing will work. The whole city is ancient. Carson can only turn on things when he's scared to death. I've heard there's a couple of guys who can manage the ad artifact, but you turn them all on and they give you their secrets, and we are so screwed if you don't go with us. Nice to be appreciated. John made up his mind to let a little anger show. Here I thought you were having second thoughts because you wanted to stay here with me. Rodney's shoulders managed to hunch further. Why would I want to be with someone who thinks I'm a terrible person? You are a terrible, no-good, rotten person. Everyone says so. John wondered why he wasn't fleeing this argument. I wasn't surprised you were using me. Now Rodney turned, eyes bloodshot. I was honest about what I wanted. You knew this was about the tech? Point. John assumed that meant he had to stop whining about oppression and such. You guys might do fine on Atlantis, never know. He tried to sound reassuring. Some of that stuff, once initialized, can be used by anybody. What if their DHD is gene activated? Rodney drank some more coffee. I can come up with a million different ways we could die. Genius here. John didn't want to envision any of those scenarios. Weir and O'Neill want me to go die with you guys. They may overrule Sumner. It could happen. Rubbing his eyes, Rodney yawned. I'm sorry I was angry, okay? I never say that, but I am. I was mad that you looked thrilled when I was the most unhappy I've been since I was shipped to Siberia. It was petty of me, but that's me. I'm a petty man. And yes, it's easier to talk to you when you're in your fur, as you say. I don't smirk as much when I'm furry. John smirked on purpose. He felt like he should explain one or two things, but he did appreciate the apology. I was happy because O'Neill was letting me take my copter up. So you weren't jumping for joy at the prospect of living? Rodney went back to his coffee. Letting out a long sigh, John found a stool and sat next to him. The average lifespan for a feline is 30. I've beat the odds for the last 5 years. I'm not excited about Sumner, no, but if I get that assignment, I'll go. You know I will. You had a panic attack at the mere idea! Rodney was on his feet now, waving his hands. Lowering his head, John wished he'd had better control that day. Colonel Sumner is every feline's worst nightmare. But Rodney, I'm in the SGC now. It took me a few days to adjust to the idea, but here I am. He tugged out his new dog tag and showed it to him. O'Neill owns me. I honestly don't know what he'll do with me. Could be anything. I apologized, and I never do that, and we're still back to the problem. You have no idea where you'll be assigned, and I'm assailed by doubts that going on this mission is the right thing for me. I like living. I like living a lot. You want to keep this friendship between us professional? John nodded in agreement on all those points, recapping his own. I wanted something, but I was being an idiot. He clapped his hands on his thighs. Are we good? I'm tired of talking. I agree that you're an idiot. Rodney swayed a little, ending up leaning against John. John let it happen, keeping his hands to himself, but liking the touch. He wasn't sure what to say now, and he wasn't sure they'd worked anything out. Rodney started to slide, and John caught him, pulling him up and towards the door before they both hit the floor. You have to sleep occasionally, Rodney, John fussed, hauling him down the hallways to his quarters. Rodney flailed the door open, and John put him on his bed. 5 seconds later, Rodney was sound asleep, still in his clothes. Grumbling, John yanked off Rodney's shoes and pants, getting him more or less under the covers. Rodney muttered about work and his cat, and then did nothing but snore. Somewhat satisfied, John turned off the lights and found a chair. There wasn't any place he had to be, or anything he had to do, and he was content to sit and watch for a few minutes. John's feline suggested he take a nap, curled up next to Rodney, but John's human was more interested in being awake. Usually John gave in to his cat, but today he was too restless. Rodney sat bolt upright. Oh, you're here. Yeah. John rubbed his hand through his hair. He might be terrible with people, but he knew when he was screwed. Rodney, you're killing me with the mixed signals. Flopping back down on his pillow, Rodney sighed. I'm not saying sorry again. Felines don't have sex. That's not my fault. Stunned, John flew to his feet. Wait, Rodney, wake up! Again, Rodney sat up. What? He snapped. Did you hack the center? All the files? All of them? John might have yelled the questions. No! Rodney crossed his arms, trying to look indignant and only pulling off confused and rumpled. Yes, all of them. John laughed, swooped over, and kissed him on the mouth. Good job. Go back to sleep. I'll explain later. Rodney grabbed him by the shirt. Where are my pants? I'm awake now. Excited, relieved, and willing to take him at his word, John stuffed Rodney back in his pants and shoes. I feel violated, Rodney said, shoving at him. You liked it. Come on. John didn't want to explain. He dragged Rodney to the infirmary and put him in a chair in front of Beckett's desk. Beckett stared at them both, wide-eyed. John grinned. Rodney hacked the center. He got the files. Beckett blinked and then grinned. Even the medical files? I'm nothing if not thorough. What is this all about? Rodney groused at them. I was trying to sleep. I'm going to track down the general. Rodney, stay here and give him everything he wants. John hurried away, hoping that for once Rodney cooperated with a minimum of complaints. Daniel's lab was the first place John looked, and sure enough, O'Neill was slumped in a chair, fiddling with a pencil. I'm so close. Daniel was in front of a whiteboard. He took off his glasses and tossed them on the nearest table. He stopped, pointing and staring at John. Wait, you said something about the symbols. General, good news. Rodney already hacked the center. He and Beckett are holed up going over the information now. John hoped Daniel stopped staring at him soon. O'Neill sat up straighter. That McKay is less and less annoying. I'm going to get him some coffee, keep him human a bit longer. John almost smiled, but Daniel was still staring, and it was getting weird. You're still going to the center, O'Neill pointed at him. John wasn't sure how to give O'Neill the bad news. For me to go there, my owner has to accompany me. No unsupervised felines are allowed on site. I'm starting to dislike these people. O'Neill's face shifted to anger. I'll be there. Do I have to leash you? The sarcasm would have made an airman cry. It's customary. John let out the breath he was holding. He felt like he should explain. They don't trust us with the kits. We might advocate rebellion and freedom? Daniel asked in a mild tone. John pointed at him. That. You've never been back before? Daniel squinted at him, flipping a marker in his hand. No, we only return if we're being retired there. John had never wanted to go back. He still thought the device needed more testing, but there was no way to do that without felines. Hopefully, Rodney and Beckett could give them more information from the stolen files. Tell McKay we're having a meeting tomorrow at 8 a.m. O'Neill smiled for no reason that John could see. Daniel, I see a twinkle in your eye that bodes no good. Daniel ducked his head and grinned. John took that as his cue to leave, moving back to the infirmary. Those two were something beyond friends, something that John had never had or even known existed. It sure as hell didn't exist for his kind. Nay, I do not need your help. Beckett made a shooing motion at the door. You may be feline, but you're not a geneticist. Go on with you now. Let me work. His tone was gentle, not harsh. As soon as I know anything, I'll look you up. Come on, John, we'll get food. You're always hungry, Rodney wheedled. We'll play with yarn and I'll get out the catnip. I hate you both. John still laughed as he marched out of the infirmary, head held high. Rodney ended up chasing after him, and John whipped around, poking him in the chest. Never joke about the nip, he growled. Eyes wide, Rodney shook his head. I wouldn't. Liar. John still let Rodney tag along all the way to the cafeteria. It was deserted, no fresh food in sight, no airmen with bones, just MREs, and John realized he truly had been living the high life. At their usual table, two MREs each, John wondered how many hours Rodney had actually been awake when he started drowsing. John wanted to smack at him, but he was clearly exhausted. It wasn't the right time, but no one was around, and John had to correct something. Felines can have sex, you know. The center doesn't recommend it, ever, but that doesn't mean we can't. Rodney sat upright fast. John stuffed his mouth full of bread, wishing he could take the words back. He chewed and watched Rodney think. Oh, I thought it meant that you couldn't, like they'd neutered you or something. That is the most offensive thing you've ever said, and I've heard you compare Grodin's brains to tapioca pudding. John shoved his tray away and got to his feet. I need fur time. He stalked off to his room, unable to sit any longer. He stripped out of his clothes fast and switched before his shirt hit the bed. Staying in the confined space of his room wasn't an option. He opened the door just in time to stop Rodney from ringing the chime. Pushing past him, John grumbled. He wanted to swat Rodney on the ass. Rodney made a few gulping noises and yelled, "Come on, how was I to know?" to John's retreating tail. John lifted his tail high enough to show off his balls and kept moving. He was still bitching when he got on the elevator. The airman swallowed hard and then took him up.
John stomped out into the snow, glad to see some sunshine, and looked about for the highest vantage point. The snowplow didn't seem high enough today. What John would give for some trees or a cliff. "You okay, Major?" John chirped and spotted exactly what he wanted. He took a running start, jumped, and jumped again, sliding to a stop on a metal overhang, probably built to give people a bit of protection from the snow. He rolled to his back, making a spot, and then sat up, crossing his paws. There was enough wind to ruffle his fur. He watched people come and go, and once a small plane landed, delivering some crates. "You're an idiot!" Rodney, bundled up like a snowman with goggles, glared at him. "A damn idiot! Get down here before those precious balls of yours freeze off." Kicking some snow in Rodney's direction wasn't mature at all. John indulged and then got down while Rodney was sputtering. He landed lightly on his paws and then cannonballed Rodney into a snowbank. The lovely sound of cursing in two languages was his reward, and he sat on Rodney's face to make sure Rodney got the message about John's balls. "Get off me, you psychopathic furball!" Rodney squirmed and threw his arms and legs around, but John sat calmly waiting for the storm to pass. Finally, Rodney collapsed, not fighting any longer. "Okay, I'm sorry, I give." Snorting, John let him up. Rodney brushed ineffectually at the snow before trying and failing to pull John's ear. "O'Neill wants you in his office, too." With a cougar sigh, John shoved Rodney back into the snow and headed for the elevator. Rodney should have mentioned that first. If John was in trouble, he was placing the blame squarely on Rodney's shoulders. The airman running the elevator didn't wait for Rodney, and that was fine. John considered going to switch, but he was already late, so he trotted through the hallways, dodging a few people, to get to O'Neill's office. The door was open, so John went inside. "Holy shit," O'Neill breathed, startling back until his chair hit the wall. "That better be you, Major, or I'm having a serious talk with the President about global warming and the spread of wildlife." Chirping, John sat politely and waited. He should have been noisier. Scaring his commanding officer was always a bad idea. O'Neill tilted his head, continuing to stare. "When you change, are you naked?" John nodded, exaggerating the movement. "Then don't." O'Neill got out of his chair and came around the desk to stand over him. "We're leaving in the morning. You'll be flying us. As a human, I hope." He smiled, bright and sharp. "And Daniel found Atlantis." That was good news for the expedition we were planned, and John whistled his approval. He didn't think there was any way in hell they would ever convince Sumner to take him. The list of people going is still changing, being updated daily, but... O'Neill hesitated, going again to one knee even though it had to hurt. "I am not going to ask you to go, nor is Dr. Weir going to be allowed to guilt you into going as long as Colonel Sumner is in command. Like everyone else, you have the right to volunteer, and the right to decline. There's plenty of work for a fine cougar such as yourself in the SGC right here on Earth." The words clanged into John's head, and he opened his mouth, panting. It was damn hard to believe, and he'd been lied to so many times, but he didn't smell deception on O'Neill. John lowered his head and rubbed his chin on O'Neill's knee. Loyalty earned. "That doesn't mean anything icky, does it?" O'Neill's eyes laughed, and he slowly reached out to pat John on the head. "Don't tell anyone I did that." John chirped and clicked. He got to his paws and looked at the door. "Yeah, you're dismissed." O'Neill went back to his desk with a groan and a curse about getting old. "And there better not be a pile of bones in that room when you leave." Flicking his tail, John ambled towards his room in a shower. Tomorrow, he was getting in the air again. This place had been great, but he was ready to fly away. He smelled Rodney before he rounded the last corner, and John paused. For the first time since he was a child, he'd been able to be in his fur whenever he wanted. He even made a friend or two, and yes, he wanted to fly, but he would miss this igloo. Maybe O'Neill would let him visit from time to time. Peeking around the corner, John saw Rodney leaning against the wall that was opposite both of their doors. Rodney was waiting on him. John would miss Rodney. Head down, tail dragging, John went around the corner. "John? Oh shit, what did O'Neill say? Did he threaten you?" Rodney opened John's door and ushered him inside. John toppled dramatically to the floor and groaned. Rodney went to his knees and clutched at him. "John, I am going to kill O'Neill. He can't do this. Whatever it is, I'll fight it. I have a big brain." John grabbed Rodney with his paws and pulled him down to sprawl on, laughing in his cougar way. Rodney froze for 1 second and then punched him. "You dirty furbag! I was worried. I thought bad things." Deliberately, John licked Rodney's face from chin to receding hairline. Yes, he would miss Rodney. Rodney made gagging noises, but got busy stroking him under the chin, behind the ears, and all the other good places. John rolled to his back and purred. John, we have to talk about Atlantis. That wasn't going to happen. John surged to his paws and strolled to the bathroom. He looked back once to see Rodney on the floor, arms wrapped around his knees. Sooner or later, we'll have to talk. Later was better for John. He shut the door, switched, and started the shower. If he knew Rodney, the stubborn human would be waiting when John was finished. They did need to talk, but Rodney could never understand the heady feeling that came with having a choice. Clean and dry, John wrapped a towel around his hips and stepped out. Rodney averted his eyes and kicked at a bone. Are you taking these with you as lovely souvenirs of your time here? Yes. John went to his dresser and palmed open the drawer. Letting the towel drop, he dressed and began pulling everything out to be repacked in his duffel. I've had fun. Sure, once or twice I wanted to bite you, but it's been fun. You act like this is over. We're done. That made John pause. Aren't we? You want a professional relationship. I'm going to spend some time flying General O'Neill here and there. You have your research, whether here or on Atlantis. Maybe I'll catch up with you later. Maybe they did neuter you. Rodney flinched when John was suddenly right there, putting them face to face. No emotional attachments? You move from base to base? No friends? No family? Nothing but you and your helicopter? I had a friend. He's dead. John ground out the words, angrier than he had any right to be. And yes, that's my life. No one cares. No one wonders where I went. That's the way it's always been. It won't be for me. I'm going to miss you, and I don't miss anyone. Rodney rubbed his face with his hands, leaning towards him. John could smell Rodney's sadness. Rodney seemed to have run out of words, and John took the tiny step that brought them together. John nuzzled into Rodney's neck, wanting to mark him, not sure how this was going to work. This was more than a furtive hand job behind the ammo dump with someone who would hate him later. This was something John desperately wanted, and that was scary as hell. Rodney's hands came up, squeezing and stroking, making John pant. Promise me there'll be no claws. Claws near my dick is bad. Rodney tapped John on the nose. Pay attention, this is important. John was lost in the smell and feel of him. Part of him wanted to switch and rut like an episode of Wild Kingdom, but he'd control it. Why did you turn me down before? Did I mention the claws? I'm pretty sure I did. Rodney tugged John's ear. I also don't fall into bed with every handsome cougar who comes to town. The reasons were stupid, but John understood fear and hesitation. He nudged Rodney with his cheek and kissed him. The bunk was just 2 steps away, but Rodney refused to budge. My room. That bunk is tiny, and I'm not banging my head on a metal strut. Rodney sidestepped towards the door. Move it, or I flush the nip I had Carson smuggle me. Now John believed him. I can't get high on duty. He hadn't indulged in years. I have to fly tomorrow morning. Oh, sorry then. Rodney didn't look sorry. I'll just keep it, ensuring that you'll come back to me. He looked smug. I mean, to turn on stuff, help me in the lab, you know. And if you go to Atlantis? John wasn't giving away his feelings on the matter either way. He had moments where the tech and Rodney lured him, and moments where he'd rather be shot than be under Sumner's command, which was very ironic. Even there, Rodney raised his chin. I don't want to say goodbye. You sure? John had to give him an out. I shed a lot, leave bones everywhere, and generally like to chew things. Rodney kissed him, slow and easy, lots of tongue and heat. Not sure you ever had a bone until you got here. You had the look of a starved kid in a candy store. Oh, shut up, John growled, deciding that they had to get things moving to skin again and away from the talking. He grabbed Rodney's hand and dragged him to Rodney's room in the big bed. Pushing him down, John had one more thing to say. I might stress switch. Please don't scream. I'll switch right back, I promise. Truth and disclosure, huh? Rodney spread his hands. How about we go slow and you focus tightly on keeping your claws away from my dick? Oh, and your super sharp teeth. And he started undressing. As soon as John saw skin, he sort of lost his mind. It was the fact that he could touch, lick, even nibble if he was careful, and Rodney's wiggling was a good thing this time. Rodney reached up and yanked John's ear. Undress, maybe today, for a face? John practically shredded his clothes in his hurry to get naked, and for 1 second, the familiar routine nearly switched him. You can if you want, Rodney said, pulling him down. I've had cats in my bed before. The laughter came easy, and John switched. He purred in Rodney's face, marking him with his chin several times in different spots. Rodney stroked him and laughed, and it was easy to switch back. John curled down on him, bringing every part of his skin into contact with Rodney. It made his head spin, and he made sure not to say anything at all, because it would be something pitiful and stupid. Rodney's hands grabbed, pulled, stroked, touching him gently, roughly, and John went to pieces. Finding his breath was hard, and Rodney's grinning made John want to bite him, and twice didn't seem near enough as John came again, pushing against Rodney's cock over and over. Rodney held him, guiding him to the side, and they lay together, breathing and continuing to touch. John kissed Rodney until they were both drowsy, and when Rodney's eyes shut, John switched without even thinking about it. He shifted until he was mostly on his back, nosing the side of Rodney's head when he cuddled in close. They fell asleep that way.